It's time for Twig This Week in Google. What a potpourri we have for you today. Fortunately, a great panel here. Jeff Jarvis, of course. Mike Elgin's here. Danny Sullivan from Search Engine Land. We're going to talk about new phones, new tablets, a new Google logo. This Week in Google, coming up next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twig.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly, CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 316, recorded Wednesday, September 2nd, 2015. One stream at a time. This Week in Google is brought to you by LegalZoom. If you're looking to incorporate, form an LLC, get a trademark, or more, LegalZoom can help you get started the right way. LegalZoom, not a law firm, but they can connect you with an independent attorney. Visit LegalZoom.com and use the offer code TWIG in the referral box at checkout for your special discount. And by FreshBooks, the super simple cloud accounting software that's giving thousands of freelancers and small businesses the tools they need to save time billing and get paid faster. Try it free at FreshBooks.com/TWIG. And by Braintree. If you're working on a mobile app and searching for a simple payment solution, check out Braintree. With one easy integration, you can offer your customers every way to pay, period. To learn more and for your first $50,000 in transactions fee-free, go to BraintreePayments.com/twig. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show where we cover Google, the cloud, the Googleverse, the Googleicious, the alphabet, A through G. Danny Sullivan's in here from Search Engine Land. Good to see you. Always love having you on the show. Thank you, Danny.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Yeah. He's authoritative. This guy has been covering Google since before it was Google.
Since before it was Alphabet.
Actually, Yahoo used to be Acabono, right? Was Google?
You know, the server that they were on?
Yeah, remember to go to Yahoo in the early days?
Yeah, there was some weird
Acabono.stanford.edu, I think. Acabono was a
I do not remember that.
Famous sumo wrestler. Were you too young?
Yes, I'm very young.
You missed out on that. But, that's Mike Elgin. Hello, Mike Elgin.
Hey,
how are
going?
You?
Good, good.
You were up early today covering the Sony announcement.
Yes, yes. It was great. It was a great announcement. And it was a Sony announcement, Leo. I'm just going to throw it out there. It was a Sony announcement, so everything was better.
Yeah.
Cool stuff that you're not going to buy.
And no baloney.
No baloney. None at all.
None at all. It was all baloney. I saw like 3 minutes on the phone and the rest of it was baloney.
It was funny because I think to me the grandest irony of today's news is that Sony announced a 4K screen phone.
Yeah, that's
which was
wild.
Redonkulous.
Yeah.
And Apple, 9to5Mac announced that next week they're going to announce Apple TV, which will not support 4K.
Yeah.
So Apple's major television product doesn't support 4K, but Sony's phone does.
There you go. It's in a nutshell, ladies and gentlemen. The tech industry. And no better observer of the tech industry, well, second only to Mike Elgin, Mr. Jeff Jarvis, professor of journalism.
Hey.
All right. There's no better. Your blog at buzzmachine.com is a must read. Jeff joins us every week, of course. What is the pixel per inch on the Sony 4K?
I have that information.
I mean, this is UHD. I mean, most of the higher-end phones are UHD. I'm not sure what the... It's not that much more than UHD, or is it? I don't know.
It's gigantic. It's gigantic. I'll have it for you in a second.
802 pixels per inch? 808? That is crazy talk.
No human eye can see that.
No, you can't. After 300 or 400, you really... Yeah.
And what's that? Does that have an impact on power?
Oh, yeah.
I have to imagine.
It does.
Every pixel costs you.
So the phone has a gigantic battery. It actually gets two days of battery life.
But they only, said.
Well, they said, days. Right? If you don't turn it on, but it's a huge battery. It's 300 and something milliamp per hour.
3,000 something.
It's big, just plain large.
Let us talk first about the new logo because I think that's real Google news. Google announced it yesterday on their blog, and with this, and I had to go to the Google archives to find it. Google Doodle, because now it's just they took the original serif font and replaced it with a sans serif font, which is design is so funny because designers always yell at me when I say this, but it's very fashion.
Yep.
Driven.
Yep.
It's like whatever's, you know. I mean, people thought avocado refrigerators looked great. And burnt orange appliances looked
designers, had one of those.
That you could have, designers argued, no. Burnt orange, it's going to be the color for 1972.
And
it's not that it's not that we have better taste than they did in 1972. It's fashion, right?
Right, exactly.
Designers hate it when I say.
Plus, we have better taste. You know, the thing with this thing with any corporate logo, the problem is the suits get together. You get all these cooks in the kitchen, and everybody knows how they want the new logo to make them feel. I want to weep with nostalgia, but at the same time, I want to feel the future coming. They're letters, people.
Aren't we getting? Weren't we going to get a design? You never got a hold of them, huh? We had a designer wanted to come on and talk about this, and I said we'll give you 10 minutes.
Jeez, I can't even believe.
2 hours.
No.
So this font, they actually invented this font. It's called Product Sans.
Sans. Product.
Serious?
I'm serious. Sans. That's the name of the typeface.
And, but see, Sans is very hip right now, right?
Yeah.
Sans fonts.
Yeah.
In fact, if you look, if you go to twit.tv, we spent a lot of money on a sans serif font.
Yeah. Yep.
Verlag, it's called. I like it.
It's called Netcast Sans.
Netcast Sans, I'm calling. No, it's Verlag. But that's very modern, right? It's a sans font. You don't do serifs anymore.
Oh, but that's exactly why I do them all the time.
Because you're Gutenberg.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It is supposedly more legible without the serifs. Serifs are those little widgets, the little
wings.
But
it looks a little more... I guess my issue with it is it's even more childlike.
It does look childlike. Now, maybe it doesn't help that the guy's drawing with a crayon. You know what? I'm trying to, and I wish we did have that designer on because, for instance, it looks like, you know, we talk about kerning, which is the distance.
The kerning is off to me, too.
It looks off to me. The kerning is the distance between letters. And this looks like a monospaced font. It doesn't look kerned.
Yeah, the E sticks out there too much. And it is, you know, it is getting destroyed by the designers who say that it's this, that, and the other thing. But this is one of those things where we'll all get used to it.
Yeah, yeah.
It'll burn itself into our brains.
It's just a logo.
Well,
right?
but I think what's even more interesting about it is why they did it. And my theory is that they are trying to look as absolutely warm, fuzzy, and innocuous as they possibly can, as they're dragged into court in India and Europe and elsewhere over antitrust charges and privacy issues in Germany and all the rest. They want to just look like something right out of preschool.
Just, we're Google. You can't. Google.
This is my argument long since on the show that the world sees, the rest of the world sees Google as Godzilla and Google sees itself as Snuffleupagus. And they're both, you know, gigantic monsters.
Yeah,
and so Google's trying to present this, and you know it's a fine logo, it's perfectly fine, and the childishness of it is the colors, but a serif added a little bit of
serif's adultness,
nuance.
Actually, but again, it's fashion. Remember the movie Helvetica, which I loved.
Yes,
talking about how sophisticated Helvetica was as a sans font.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that really, designers, if they really were sharp, would understand that Helvetica is, of course, perfect. And I suspect that's what began the sans serif movement. Let's not forget Comic Sans is a sans serif font, too.
Well, the whole notion of, I mean, Gutenberg moment coming up. Drink, people, drink. Right, Gutenberg's first fonts tried to mimic scribes' handwritings. It was absolutely illegible. Then Jensen was the first designer of a Roman font. And it was beautiful. It was gorgeous. And it was finally pleasing to the eye, and you could make sense of it. Now that's what we're all trained to do. If you go to the second link, the Fusion thing has the stills of the logos through the ages.
Ah, nice.
So I think I'm also guessing that part of what they must have considered, I'm certain that they did, is how it looks tiny, how it looks at different sizes. I mean, Apple came out with San Francisco font for the Apple Watch, and they liked it so much they rolled it back up into the phone. And so this is something that has to look like, if you look at the Fave icons, for example, their little G has to look perfect, tiny, tiny, tiny on a screen with pixels. And so I think that this, you know, the smaller you get a typeface like this, the better it's going to look relative to serif fonts and other things. So this is going to look good on all the devices, all the different places where Google's...
Serifs generally don't do well in small
font sizes. They do not.
Danny, talking about Akebono, and I was trying to remember the original name of Google. Well, this Fusion article tells us Backrub.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, back when it was out on, and they used to have a little, the hand, there you see it.
And it's sans serif, by the way.
Yeah, that didn't last for very long. What I thought was interesting with this is, despite the change, if you look at something like Apple, where you have the single Apple signal, that's very iconic, and I think you really identify with Apple, and you know that it's Apple, and you can use that in all sorts of things and have an Apple brand be on it. You know, the Google logo to me feels a bit kind of cartoonish. I know we'll all get used to it, and I can't say that the old logo was necessarily that great either. But they still seem to lack that kind of what's your icon, right? I know you got a logo, but that's not the same thing as an icon. And they've done that new G thing where you have, you know, the dots spin around. There it is, and it turns all into that. It'll be interesting to see if they actually adopt that and try to use that G more as their icon as well, or if at some point Google says, you know, we actually need a symbol to represent Google, and the G isn't going to cut it. You know,
ironically, it looks a little bit like the Apple rainbow logo.
And I think that the G is very problematic because you essentially have a single letter with multiple colors. And so as that shrinks down and smaller in size, or as you move away in distance, it doesn't retain the line of the letter anymore. It looks like this splotchy mess. The yellow fades into the white background or whatever. And I think that's really problematic. They're going to have to fix that, I think, at some point.
I can't believe we're spending so much energy analyzing.
I know.
Well, I mean, but I think it is worth talking about because, first of all, it's a Google show. Google's one of the world's leading brands globally.
Right.
I mean, this thing is going to be with us for years. And so, you know, this is a big part of the identity of this company, I think. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, although they did change their logo fairly recently. They dropped the depth, which was really dated, highlighting to give it a 3D look. They dropped that only 2 years ago. So that's, you know, they have tweaked it before. And remember all the attention Yahoo got when they changed.
If you put those two together. I agree. It's the childlike nature of it. And I agree with you. I had the same thought you did, Mike, that this is trying to make them
I find that interesting.
Look harmless worldwide. Yeah.
That's very preschool, isn't it?
Yeah.
I remember going to a lunch in South Park that Google held back when it was still pretty small. It was Larry Sergey and maybe 20 other press people. And they gave us all Brio trains, you know, the wooden track. And they had Alphabet cars, and they bought Google. And they gave – and I wish I had that. I have it somewhere. This Brio train with Google on it. And it was very much like this. It was a kid's toy. But at the time, they didn't have to prove that they weren't trying to say, no, we're just innocent kids here. So this may just be their own ethos, not having nothing to do with image, although I'm kind of inclined to.
Yeah, Larry and Sergey are basically trying to recapture that kindergarten vibe, and I'm sure that their teacher had the same thing. They're very disruptive. Sergey is very disruptive in class. He's a very disruptive kid. Yeah, it's...
All right.
It is strange.
But it's a new logo.
I
think the one interesting thing to say is it does feel like they're trying to be a little bit softer and gentler.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
As they conquer the world.
Yeah. They actually have posted something at design.google.com. Thank you, Latif, in the chat room.
Oh, and if you have that up on a screen while you're taking testimony from Larry Page on... Or Sundar Pichai, their plans to conquer the world. It's like, us? Conquer the world?
No,
look.
It's preschool.
Designers from all across the country. I'm sorry, the company, including Creative Lab and the Material Design Team, convened early this year in New York for an intense week. I mean, if you think we spent a long time talking about it.
Oh, yeah.
Week-long design sprint. We drafted a brief that identified four challenges. A scalable mark, there you go, and I agree, that could convey the feeling of the full logotype in small spaces. The incorporation of dynamic intelligent motion that responded to users at all stages of an interaction. A systematic approach to branding in our products to provide consistency in people's daily encounters with Google. A refinement of what makes us googly, combining the best of the brand our users know and love with thoughtful consideration for how their needs are changing. This is designer speak.
Oh, boy, is it.
There's always verbs.
Oh, sitting through those meetings is just torture.
And I love designers. I really do. I really do. And I wish I had your taste. But normal people hear this stuff and they go, what?
You know, the funny thing about these, and again, I've been in a bunch of meetings where you design a logo or something like that, and it's and the best idea comes, and then you move past it and on to the bad idea, always. Yeah. I don't know why that is.
Just... Well, when I started EW, the magazine came out, and I had to defend it, but the truth was the design sucked badly. And I didn't know that I was a first-time editor. You let a design department keep futzing, and they will keep futzing and futzing and futzing and futzing until it's over-futzed. And that's the natural process of design, is to overdo things, I think.
Here's another quote. The Google logo has always had a simple, friendly, and approachable style. We wanted to retain these qualities by combining the mathematical purity of geometric forms. You're right. You know, it's definitely very circles and straight line, with the childlike simplicity of schoolbook letter printing. Childlike.
Wouldn't sue a little kid, would you, Germany?
Who put that verb in their minds, childlike? Do you think Larry or somebody said, you know, if you could make it childlike?
Yes.
That's not something a company, a massive multi-billion-dollar multinational, usually says. Apple, what we want to do is childlike.
Apple would never think that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Apple would be like, we want to transcend.
But besides the jokes about you know, you're not going to kick a child in Europe, there is something to saying that it's childlike is a universality and an innocence and a simplicity, and you know, it's not wrong.
Typography.
Primary colors alone get that across.
Yep. We created a custom geometric sans serif typeface to complement the logo and product lockups and supporting identity materials. We call it Product Sans. The typeface design takes cues from that same schoolbook letter printing style, but adopts the neutral consistency we've all come to expect. Haven't we all come to expect neutral consistency from geometric sans serif?
I, for one, have. Yes.
I have. This allows us to maintain an
neutral is not a word they should be using.
Neutral consistency. This allows us to maintain an appropriate level of distinction between the Google logo type and the product name. Interesting. So they're really, I mean, they've spent a lot of energy on the dots and the G. That's, you know, we're all talking about the word Google, but that's not, you know, the most important.
It'll be interesting to see how they do animate it.
Yeah.
What they do with it.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Wonder what the cost of doing this is. The design has to go into every single other division. Signage, physical signage. It's not like changing Macy's logo.
Right.
You have physical signage. No mention of that.
Remember, and this was many years ago, when Steve Jobs started the company Next, he went to one of the most famous designers in the world, Paul Rand, to create the logo. Rand said, here's the deal. I'll do it for you, Steve. It'll cost you $100,000. You get no input, and that's it. There, I'll do something for you, and that's what you get.
Brilliant.
No changes, nothing. So that was in 1986, $100,000. It's got to be 10 times
and
that.
The logo sucked.
I like the Next logo. You don't like that?
No, I don't like it. The letters vanish into the thing. It's forgettable, I think.
The cube?
I mean, you kind of remember it was a cube, but I think it was more or less forgettable.
Somewhere I have the poster of that signed by Paul Rand. I've got to find that. It's probably worth some.
It's so funny. One of my earliest experiences with this sort of thing is we actually went, Windows Magazine, we launched with a serif font. We ended up changing it to sans serif font. The serif font was designed by Milton Glaser.
Yeah.
It was
one of the
beautiful.
Brilliant designers of all time, right?
The publisher and some others decided that, no, we need a more contemporary look. We don't want this thing. And so the associate designer for one of the publications in this organization designed this sans serif. Yeah. No, that's fine. Go with it.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know. It's like entropy. Everything leads towards sans serif roundy fonts, I guess.
Well, I opened a new tab and went to Google, and it's funny how it takes me back for a second. It'll take about a week to get used to, but.
It does.
So what's that?
And even though it now is solid colors, it still feels like it's being drawn in chalk.
Yeah.
It really does have that kind of.
Yeah.
It fades away or something.
It does.
I don't know.
Yeah. I'm a little upset the capital G. I feel like the top should
it's
go
not finished.
A little bit more. Yeah,
it stops undone. Early. It's premature ejaculation. And then the E, why is it pointed up? Where is it going? It looks like it wants to leave.
I think the old one did too, right?
Wants to go for a ride. I'm out of here.
I remember when the fight with trying to pick the Entertainment Weekly logo. This is bringing back memories. They picked a grotesque version of the font. My reaction as an amateur was, well, yeah, it looks grotesque. That's a technical term.
You know, it's so funny because when I look at twit.tv, I really know for a while we had a problem with our – we get it from typography.com. It's a net font. And for a while we had a trouble with it, and I think it defaults to Helvetic or something. I really didn't like it.
Yeah.
And then when I found out how much Verlag was going to cost us, I asked the designer, isn't there a free font that looks – and he said, well, there's this. And I really didn't like it. It's very subtle, but there's just something – I love Verlag. I think that is a gorgeous font. And it really, it says something. The choice of typeface does really communicate
something. It really does. Yep.
Oddly enough.
I mean, think about the most iconic. Look, think about the Apple website, for example, or all the logos you've seen in the year, or the, you know, some of the, there was some discussion earlier about the original NASA logo from the 70s and 80s.
Yeah, don't ever change that.
Oh, it's brilliant.
That's historic
it's
now.
It's brilliant. It looks like a...
There was a little discussion on my Facebook page about what companies have not changed their logo. Somebody said Coca-Cola, but that's changed appreciably over time. I was told by Ford that the script Ford in the blue oval is Henry Ford's handwriting.
Wow.
So I think that has not changed in some time. Yeah, Mr. Robot.
Really,
people are pointing out that in Mr. Robot, the Evil Corp, that is the company that is the center of that, it's called E Corp, has the same logo as Enron, which it does.
Nice.
So that's a good choice. What is this? I don't know what this is.
That is a large evil corporation.
It's not Evil Corp. This is Evil Corp. There it is, E Corp. All right. We have now...
Well, we have one more note on this.
Okay, we have not...
Thanks to search engine land.
Yes.
We have the fact that the search box is bigger.
What?
Did you notice that?
Oh, yeah.
You noticed that, Danny.
Oh, I didn't notice that. But Barry Schwartz, our fine standing news editor, notices these things.
And the microphone is in color now. I noticed that. Mm-hmm.
On Android as well.
Probably does some animation if you speak, I'm sure.
Yeah, if you follow that link, exactly. There's an animation showing the difference in size. Precisely, Danny. You know your staff well.
And you know that when you hover over, I'm feeling lucky.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about all that.
It changes into something weird.
I mean, you can. It's interesting, though, because it is really rare that I actually go to the Google homepage.
Right, whoever sees this anymore.
Right, but people do. I mean, you know, people do, but it is, you know, so much of a change where if you're on your phone, I'm just searching in the Omnibox or, oh, I loved that one. That was a great logo.
Yeah, Tom Sawyer.
If, you know, or if you are, you know, you're speaking to it or you're in Chrome on the desktop, you know, even if you're using Safari, you're not going to the Google homepage, you know, unless you type it specifically. I think most of the people going to the Google homepage are the people who are using, you know, Bing and they type in Google.
You're probably right. Yeah. Some people probably, I would guess, set this as their default homepage in their browser, right?
Yeah.
They could, although it's interesting. If you were going to have a homepage as default, I mean, Bing is a beautiful homepage.
Much nicer. Yeah.
You know, they're always showing you different images that are out there.
Right.
It's really well done.
Yeah. And you can even, now there's sound on the homepage, so you can hear.
Where are we at today?
This is in Iceland.
I think I've been at that.
Stroker Geyser.
I was just there.
Wow. They knew.
I was there like 3 months ago.
I see you know Danny Sullivan.
Going off. I thought it looked
perhaps
really
you'd like to see.
Except my view had a lot of people holding selfie sticks.
Yeah. Oh, but, God. No, so that's actually interesting that you say this, Danny, because this is a remarkable alternative to Google, which is notorious for a simple, clean design.
Fast.
And even after Marissa Meyer left, they, you know, it kept it as simple as possible. And you could not get more diametrically opposed.
Yeah.
This is This is, they've got a video on the Bing page.
Yeah.
With audio and news stories and suggested searches. And there's even these little highlights that load. You know, what's amazing is it does load fairly fast.
Yep.
It must have been preloading all day. You don't think, I doubt Microsoft spent any time on the Bing logo at all.
Well, actually, no. That, don't you remember? It was about a year ago that Microsoft went through this huge rebranding.
Oh.
And they had a very long documentation of, this is why all of our stuff comes together. And
oh, yeah.
This is how our angles all come together. And that Bing logo, I think, came in as part of the same kind of rebranding that they did for some of the other Microsoft stuff at the time.
Right. I think it's amazing. They have a geyser erupting on.
Yeah, you got to be careful where you sit around there.
This is going to, in a few years, going to look very dated, isn't it, this page? Maybe not. I don't know.
Well, the images don't get dated.
It's beautiful. But, actually, I love it.
And the logo, of course, did change. I've got, you know, it made all my other Bing stuff outdated.
Right.
I have a nice Bing snowboard, and now my logo on it doesn't
match. Oh, man, your Bing snowboard. Where is it? You're in a different room today.
Oh, yeah. I'm in a different house. Our other house is having some construction, so I had to move out.
Wait. Your other house?
I'm in a laundry. Well, not our other house. I mean, like, we're in a rented house, so.
Oh, okay.
Our summer house. We're in the summer house.
Summer house. You know, that's had to do some stuff in the summer. No, we're in a rented house. So I'm tucked away, actually, in a laundry room.
So how did Barry Schwartz know? I mean, did he measure?
You know, you should have Barry on the show someday. First of all,
I'd love to. I'd love
monitors.
To.
We have him on TNT all the time. It's great.
Yeah.
My guess is he's probably saw somebody note it, although usually if he got it from somewhere, someone will he'll credit it at the bottom of the page, unless it's just so widespread that it's happening out there. So he may have seen people saying, oh my gosh, have you seen that the logo's changed? Because there's some people who really get into watching that sort of stuff.
He says,
but it's amazing because, you know, we go through the debates like, oh, you know, they made the search box longer. Does anybody care? And we're like, we'll write an article. I'm like,
but you
yeah,
know, this is data driven. There's a reason why they do that. They're not just kind of, hey, let's add 33 more pixels to the. I mean, they have data that tells them something.
Yeah. And, you know, what they have done over time. And in fact, I don't know if you recall, a few years ago, they got mocked for this. And I can't remember who did it. And it might have been Steve Jobs, where they enlarged the search box and someone. Made fun of them, like, and what do? They made their search box better. But then again, you know, they're a search company. I understand people like to type in there, and you like to have room to type.
Wait a minute. I hate this, though. Wait a minute. Is this normal behavior? So I've got the full page. I start typing something.
That's
it jumps up to the top. I hate that.
Always does that.
That's Google Instant.
That's instant.
Google Instant.
That stinks.
Yep.
Well, but if you want to get to stuff after, you might not.
They're trying, you know what they're trying to do? Get you used to typing the top of the screen.
Yeah,
so you stop going to the Google front page.
Interestingly, and I don't really want to get into real criminology here. Notice, thanks to Danny's staff's animation, that shopping and news have changed position.
Oh,
that's interesting. Hmm.
By the way, what is a Hover Bosart? And why is this?
That's a great question.
What is the best Hover Bosart? Why is a typo in the instant search results?
And who is Mr. Robot?
What is my IP and who is Mr. Robot? Wow. Those are something I must have searched for, right? I'm surprised it's preserving the typo. Where's, I don't even see shopping.
No, if you go back to Danny's thing.
Okay. I would, but I don't really care. Let's move on. I'm sorry. I'm a bad, bad man. So Google has... Actually, this is a good one for you, Danny. Google and Firefox have teamed up to deprecate Flash as of this month.
Great.
As of yesterday, Flash will not autoplay in Chrome. If you got the new Chrome 45, which came out yesterday... Now, fortunately, if you go to our live page, it does autoplay. So they say less important content. What they don't want to say is that's ads.
That's ads. Exactly.
Right?
It is. Ads and related junk. It also has to be said that Amazon also, in addition to Google and others, have they've banned it. ban flash ads throughout Amazon.com. Not that they have a lot of ads, but they do have them, and they are tend to be flash.
Part of this comes from the fact that MSN and Yahoo have both had malicious malware ads that were based, malware is based on flash, that infected some people's computers if they hadn't updated their flash. Google has also changed the default behavior in settings now. It used to say under plugins in the content section of your settings on Chrome, run all plugin content. The default now is detect and run important plugin content. So you can change that behavior.
You can what defines important?
Google.
How is that determined? But how is that determined? That's what I couldn't figure out.
Yeah, well, Google figures all that stuff out. You don't need to worry your pretty little head about it.
Yeah, we know what's important. So you don't have to. I think they didn't want to say ads. I was pleased that, well, let's see, CNN does a lot of flash, right? Let's see if CNN stuff runs. I don't know if they have autoplay. And maybe they don't. But if I go to twit.tv/live, that starts and plays. So obviously we're important. So it's not turning off all flash. That's flash, and it runs. So it's not turning off all flash, but it is turning off flash ads. Oh, I know why. I should turn off... I've got uBlock Origin running. That's really changing my experience of the web for the better. Danny, you look good in the little window there.
Oh, thank you. In the little window.
Hello. He's in a little window within the little window.
I tried to get Barry to give me some more information on that navigation stuff, by the way. So if he reports back to me. What I was noticing, to go back to it, is that the navigation actually seems to be dynamic now. So, for example, if you search for cars.
Me and my cars.
Yeah. And then what navigation do you have there? Click off the search box. So I can see the links at the bottom.
Yeah, how do I get rid of that?
Just click anywhere on the page. Oh, my goodness. This is terrible.
Press harder, Leo.
that worked.
Let's do that again. Cars.
I think you blew out your touchpad.
Then do what? Hit enter.
There you go. Sees web, images, videos.
There it is. Shopping. There's where shopping
is. Now change cars. Add the word DVD to cars. No, put cars DVD.
Oh.
Yeah, well, anyway, you'll see it. But if you do cars DVD, then I bet shopping jumps up to the second.
It does.
Yeah.
What? Oh, because I can buy now the Cars DVD.
Oh, Barry's already come back. That is very old.
Oh, that's very been around old. For a long time.
Been doing that for ages.
Okay.
There we are.
That forever.
Yeah.
It's just, you know what, but that really raises the very important point that we don't notice these things.
Nope.
But I bet you it changes our behavior. Bet you a bunch. So you can, don't have to worry about starting up the... The video, YouTube has abandoned, starting in January, abandoned Flash. HTML5 is default. Flash ads in February, Google started converting Flash ads to HTML5. Good, you know, this is just following along with
Apple. Is
there
an over-under here on the death of Flash? Will Flash completely die?
I mean, why use Flash? We still use it because our providers, I mean, we don't use it, but Ustream uses it and Bitgravity uses it for playback. I would expect Ustream now has a fallback to non-Flash. So if you come to it on an Android device, it will fall back to HTTP streaming.
According to Ad Age, 84% of banner ads are still Flash.
Aye.
Jeez.
Well, it's too late. I think it's almost too late. But that's, I mean, when people say, oh, when Ad Age, in fact, says, oh, my God, ad blocking is costing the industry billions of dollars. Mm-hmm. You should have thought of that before you started 80% flash ads on us.
Yeah.
That's the subject of my column. Unfortunately, it's not out today. It'll be out tomorrow in The Observer. But just arguing that the basic message of all this ad blocking stuff we talked about last week is that all the things that are wrong with advertising, and we have to rethink, just like we have to rethink media, we have to rethink advertising fundamentally.
Well, you know what you're forced to, because people aren't going to see your ads.
Exactly. This is what I love about...
People are now in charge.
Yeah, this is what I love about this whole thing. The reason everybody's quickly, suddenly, finally embracing the abandonment of Flash is because of ad blockers.
Right.
People are saying, okay, these ads are so problematic, I'm just done with all of them. And so the companies like Google, who live and die by ads, are like, wait a minute, we got to do something about this. So, and also, I'm sure that, Jeff, you're calling on everyone to embrace Silverlight as an alternative. Ugh.
Oh, yes.
Even Microsoft has deprecated Silverlight. No, yes. So.
They should throw that in the bin.
But you could do everything you do with Flash now, you could do with CSS or JavaScript. Yeah. You don't need it.
It'll be all animated GIFs all the ways down.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. That's okay with me. Those can't infect you until there's a problem with the animated GIF library on your platform. So I'm glad. I think by the end of this year, no, maybe by the end of 2017, you won't see any Flash around.
Yep.
I'm surprised it's taken it this long.
I am too.
Ever since they, dropped it off of iOS, it's been that's years old at this point.
So, but ad blockers are about. I mean, we're about to hit ad blockopolips.
Yep.
Which I, by the way, was searching for a name.
The blockopolips.
Maybe.
No.
We're gonna hit it if people on iOS think it's worth going out of their way to downloading a third-party thing to add into Safari. A lot of people just aren't going to be bothered
about
it.
They're not going to do it. Yeah.
I mean, they could already do it on desktop. People don't really do it on desktop. I'm not saying it doesn't happen, but, it's there, but it has not been such an issue that the industry has said, wow, we've got to do something to stop this. It's going to be easier to do it in your mobile browser. It'll be interesting to see if people really do pick it up, but it's not. If it were going to be on by default, that would be a much different story. But it's not on by default. So you got to think, I really want this. Now I'm going to go get this. Now I'm going to download an app from a third party. Wait, who is this third party? Do I trust this third party? Do I want to use the third party? Or some third party ad blocker at some point is going to turn out to be tracking you as they delete the thing, which is going to freak people out even more. So, but if it did get that way and it suddenly everybody turns
but what
out
if
to
it,
say,
if, I don't think it'll ever be, everybody. But what if 25% of your revenue disappeared? That would be significant.
Sure. If 25% of your revenue disappears because all the ads are really getting blocked in that way, what you're going to find out happens, in my view, is native ads going to explode even more. You're going to have the ads that
you'll find other ways to do it. Yeah.
Right, which is exactly the problem.
Right. Exactly. Ironically, it's going to make it worse.
Because it makes it much worse.
Or people will be asked to pay for content more than they do now, and, maybe
and
they
content
will.
Die.
They probably won't.
And content will die. And sites will die.
Right. They're already dying.
I think we'll see that happen.
Yeah.
And there's an argument to make, not to plug myself in the Observer again, but wrote a column that when thousands of people write the same stupid blue moon story when there's nothing actually new about the moon, it shows we're a terribly wasteful industry.
Yeah.
There's plenty more efficiency to be found. Maybe we have too much content. It was the argument about television.
We have too much television content. That's right.
It was just an argument going around this week, and I can't remember who started it, but saying, there's too much good TV.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's not a problem for us in the audience, but it is a problem for those making it that they can't get their attention up to the levels they needed. But
we've got the New York Times, by the way.
Yes, thank you. I forget who, but it was a producer.
It was John Koblenz, soul searching in the TV land over the challenges of the new golden age. Everybody agrees we're in a golden age of television, except there's so much on television, a glut. This was a guy, John Landgraf of FX Networks. He said at the Television Critics Association media event, it's hard to cut through the clutter and create real buzz, and has presented a huge challenge in finding compelling original stories and the level of talent needed to sustain those stories.
Supposedly, Apple's about to create content. It must be really hard for Hollywood to try to figure out how to find original stories. I mean,
apparently it is.
You couldn't just go to, Amazon and look at the, thousands of individual authors that are putting stuff out there. I don't think, I'm not an expert on Hollywood, but your glut on finding original stories is that you don't like risk.
Right.
And so what's better for you to do is to have another 100 shows about,
maybe a cop drama.
Yeah, exactly. But let's set it in Miami.
Ooh. CISs are there?
So, I think if they wanted original stuff, they could totally have all the original stuff they want if they're willing to take the risk.
Right.
But they're not willing to take the risk. So,
do you think there's a, okay, so there's enough writers. Are there enough actors? And Maybe.
Yeah, I used to live in LA. There are plenty of actors. No Every lag. Restaurant waiter is an actor.
I'm just going to serve us at the restaurant.
Exactly.
The question is, are there enough Jennifer Lawrences that we can put into our original stuff? Because that might help. But yeah, there's probably a lack of superstars that I want to do things. But gosh, you know, it's wonderful when you watch we just had the Some Kind of Hero or Show Me a Hero that was on HBO. And like,
yeah,
the actors, I didn't even know.
No.
They were great, and it was fresh, and you're like, wow, this is like a whole new actor that I've never seen.
The story of the redevelopment of Yonkers is gripping.
Well, yeah. I mean,
did you like that show?
It was interesting.
Okay. I tried to watch it. I really did. Well, I wanted to love it.
It was. It really probably only needed about half that length.
No, but there is great stuff out there. But I can also see the glut really isn't so much there's a lack of performers and writers. The glut is that there's a lack of attention. There's only some. I mean, I already in my household, Lisa's saying, let's not start another show.
Yeah.
I don't want to start another show.
By the way, did you know they're making a TV series about Minority Report? You got to see it, Leo.
I saw that.
Maybe you got to start watching.
Better. What it's going to improve the quality because you're going to select better.
Well, right. But yeah, the problem here's the real problem. It's siloed. So Apple's going to have their own content. So you got to have that. And then you have to have HBO and you have to have Netflix and you have to have Amazon because they're doing their own content.
I think the opposite thing is happening where you realize it's just as with news content. You have to be everywhere. You have to put your you're going to have to put in instant articles. You're going to have to be on Facebook. Same here. Producers are going to have to be everywhere. Granted, Netflix and Apple are trying to differentiate themselves.
The model is different now because Apple's paying for this content and Netflix is paying for this content and Amazon's paying for this content to give them an exclusive.
Exactly.
That's the whole point.
So I have to have HBO. I have to have Amazon. I have to have Netflix.
That's just an evolution of the cable model we're already with, right?
Right?
If I wanted to watch TV and I say I want to have these channels because I want to know I want that kind of content. So my modern cable channel these days is I have Hulu. I have Netflix. I have Amazon.
But the difference is that cable didn't have great content.
What's
that? Crap, mostly.
Well, but HBO does.
The Fishing Channel and stuff like that.
Showtime, HBO.
No, but they have...
AMC.
A modern cable system for me would be, actually, I don't get this stuff through DirecTV, but I might buy my... Maybe I buy my bundle where I've got, you know, an Apple, a Netflix, the Amazon or whatever, and you know I've built it up that way. So maybe I'm paying my $40 per month, which is what I was doing with cable in the first place.
Right. Yeah.
I'm not getting everything on one single channel.
But you're getting what you want.
I don't get that now.
But isn't there a FOMO problem too? That I don't have Cinemax, I'm not going to see The Nick.
Yes, there is.
Fear of missing out.
Well, you started typing in what is, and it said what is Mr. Robot. People are hearing about Mr. Robot,
right.
And they don't even know where it is, where to find it.
Yeah. That's a very
good
point.
That's the new problem.
Yeah.
And that's great for Google because they have a search engine.
Yeah. I got a call last night from Comcast.
Oh, no.
We're going to take a break. I know. Oh, no. I shouldn't have answered it. I knew it was a spam call. And they wanted to sell me the triple play package. And I said, well, I already have Comcast business class, and I want to keep that, so I won't be buying the internet. And I don't have a phone line. We use a cell phone, so I won't be buying the phone. And he still tried to sell it to me.
Yep.
He said, but you'll save money if you have a triple play. I said, but I save money now because I don't have a phone at all. He said, yes, but even if you don't use the phone and the extra internet, it will still be less if you buy this package.
It's such a ridiculous model.
They're insane. Finally, I had to yell at him and say goodbye. It's like...
The airlines are like that. It'll cost you $350 to fly to Dallas,
unless
$200 to fly to connect in Dallas on your way to Miami.
I said even at the beginning of the call, if this is a call to sell me triple play, I don't want it. I don't need it. I can't use it because I. And of course, I know that it starts low.
Yeah.
I said, but how long is that price? Oh, 2 years, and then
and then
you're stuck.
Behavioral economics,
right?
But if I could get a good clearinghouse that somehow let me buy five things in one go, I mean, it's not going to happen, but...
It isn't because it's not in the interest of the creators. The creators is in their interest. Not in the interest of the people who fund the creators.
Yeah, but if someone can sell a Hulu subscription to someone else who wasn't even thinking about buying it, because they will buy it if they can bundle it up with something else. Hulu makes some more money off of that, even if they didn't sell it direct.
Does you know, and the music industry is moving towards this model of selling direct, basically. Artists go direct to their audience. What did the record labels really add to the mix except, you know, boy bands?
Yeah, when you become known, I mean, there's a few ways to go here. This is what I argue when I call into Howard Stern. I say, why are you sharing your money with Sirius? You should have your own empire, own it 100% on your own, online, and you can do that. Now, can Joe Schmoke and the 12-year-old Howard Stern of today do that? No. And Howard argues in return, you've got to go to broadcast. You've got to be on broadcast like I did. And I yell at him and say, you know,
nobody listens to broadcast.
Exactly what I said. I said, Howard, you're the one who ruined broadcast.
You're the last one, Howard.
You're the one who killed it.
You pulled up the ladder, and now, dude.
That's exactly what he said. That's exactly what Jeff said. You pulled up the ladder.
But there are models that start to go where you start up and you build. I mean, this is why VidCon was so amazing to me.
Yes.
Is that you can build an audience. Kickstarter is not the answer for everybody. But when you do get to be known, the question is, where does the risk capital come from for entertainment? That's right. The real issue here.
Precisely.
So right now, you have the big money player. If you want to make a blockbuster, you want to make something big, it's going to be expensive to make. You're going to have to go to somebody who's willing to make the risk capital up front. And that's going to be Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, Apple networks. True. But if you want to make something cute and funny and you want to make The Daily Show tomorrow, you don't necessarily need that risk capital. You can just do that.
Yeah.
And if you're good enough, you can build an audience and you can get going. And if the engine starts cranking, great. If it doesn't, well, throw it overboard and start the next thing. If we move to it's the blockbuster economy. As long as we're in a blockbuster economy, which some part of entertainment always will be because the returns are so magnificent if you hit it, then yes, risk capital matters. But a lot more entertainment is going to go to less and less risk capital. It's a lot cheaper to make this thing. And what proves that? This very show.
I didn't follow that, but it sounded good at the end.
Yeah, that was a great ending. No, but you're absolutely right about that. But I also think that shows are, I mean, there are multiple models. There's the VC model where the money, and it doesn't matter where the money's coming from, goes out and funds content creators, right? And then there's the other model where they hire people and to develop content. The first model is a total winner. Like, you know, everybody should, you know, you talk about, you know, you sort of bootstrap it on your own. You don't even have to do that. You can be like an app developer and you can go to a VC, Netflix or whatever it is.
Do you really even need a VC? Do you need that risk capital? I mean, most of the stuff my kid watches is not, there's no investment involved.
Yeah.
I think of Epic Mealtime. Those guys, basically, they buy a couple of dozen donuts and they're fixed. Then they shoot it.
Yeah. Yep.
And that's another question, of course, that's scaring the hell out of the TV folks and the content creators and the content distributors is what is the under 25 set doing? And how do we reach them?
Nobody knows.
They're too busy broadcasting, so you would not be able to reach them.
Privately.
Didn't you say, Jeff, I think you said this last week, that every industry just says, well, they'll grow into it.
Yeah.
Wait till they get to be older, and then they'll watch. Then they'll be watching the Merv Griffin Show.
You'll be driving a Buick.
Yeah. No, I don't think so. Our show today brought to you by LegalZoom. If you do want to start a business, you absolutely can do it. I really think you can, but there are a few little T's you need to cross, I's you need to dot. You need to get some legal work done, but you don't have to have a lawyer to do it. For more than a decade, LegalZoom has shown people that they can start a business. They can protect their family. They can confidently navigate the legal system without a law firm. See, LegalZoom's not a law firm. That's why they're so affordable. They don't charge you by the hour. Instead, you get transparent fixed prices, customer reviews. You know what you're getting up front. Whether you're incorporating, creating an LLC, that's what I did. So couldn't have been easier with LegalZoom and more affordable. I mean, it was so affordable. Trademarks, last wills, living trusts, LegalZoom is the smart choice. And this is something that they didn't have when I used them 10 years ago, but they do now. If you need legal advice, they have prearranged, pre-negotiated fees with a network of independent attorneys who can give you straightforward guidance at a fee you know ahead of time. You know what it's going to cost, and it's not much. Don't let legal hurdles become an excuse for you living your dream, protecting your family. Go to LegalZoom.com today. start building your future the right way. You can do it yourself. A little bit of help from LegalZoom. LegalZoom.com. By the way, if you use the offer code TWIG at checkout, you'll save a little bit, and they'll know that you heard it on This Week in Google, and we'd appreciate that. LegalZoom.com. I love the conversations we have on this show. It's, you know,
even when you don't understand what I'm saying.
I was being facetious.
I know you were. I know you
No, the whole issue of the cost of creating content is very interesting, because you still probably content's one of the few areas, you know, you could start a blog and write. Every sure. single word you write, Jeff, you can do all by yourself. You don't need a venture yep. fund to do it. But media, television and movies, we haven't figured out a way to do that for yeah. nothing.
Yep.
Not high quality anyway.
No, but a talk show used to be very expensive.
This
to produce.
Is cheap.
You were on a network that did it. You know, you
this
changed.
Is cheap.
Let me ask you a question. Do you ever, in a cold sweat, you know, when you open the new studio and spend all that money or those things, do you ever say, maybe I should just, I wish I'd stayed one show and I'd have no obligations to anybody and it's just me?
Every freaking day. No, I actually really like what we've built, but I am very cognizant of the fact that, it's, you know what, this is a conundrum for me, because it costs me millions of dollars a year to run a larger operation than just me and this nice studio and all this stuff. But on the other hand, would I get that same income that I get if I, you know, I don't know if shutting it or squeezing it down to a smaller size would give me that $2 million a year extra in my pocket. I don't think it would.
And the reason you, and you could grow even bigger if you'd taken capital. And the reason
well, we could grow faster. I don't know if it would be the right kind mm-hmm. of growth. Mm-hmm. I look at, you know, Revision 3 is the example for me of that.
Yes.
They got $8 million in venture funding, spent it all very quickly on studios and talent and acquiring things, and it didn't work. And we have a discipline of having to do, you know, we can only buy what we can afford. So yeah.
That's what I was writing about earlier this year when the whole GigaOM thing happened, the idea that I call it the SimCity model of building, but, you know, yeah. you build up to your budget or whatever. And, yeah, it's a difference. And to go to the video thing, I mean, what am I not remembering, like, Louis C.K. funded one of his own yeah. things because yep. he said you donate the $5. You can do it, and it's certainly a lot easier if you want to do it as an individual and you're not trying to build out something that you hope you're going to sell to another person or that you, you know, are expecting to get a capital payoff from it. If you just want to be an individual.
But stand-up comedy is cheap. I mean, Game of Thrones,
yeah.
there's no way you make Game of Thrones for less than $1 million or two an episode, right? Somebody's got to come up with that million or two an episode.
Yeah, but potentially you could still do it. You could find other ways of funding it. You could find other ways of funding it. It's just that the ways of funding it right now are very efficient and they're all institutionalized.
Well, here's the question.
If you suddenly couldn't get ads subscription revenue, you'd find another way to do stuff. I don't think it would just disappear.
Right.
So, Danny, let me ask you this. I mean, just because you follow this, all three of you follow this so much. What if venture capital started to come in? And here's what I mean by this. If you took away the need for distribution partnerships, if you said you really could distribute on your own, you call YouTube not even a distribution partnership, just a channel of sale and distribution, right? You don't need to do it to get bought by, you don't need to get greenlit by a major studio or a major network, right? Let's just imagine that. Then why wouldn't venture capital come into this business and say, give me a famous producer?
Well, I think they do. I think they do it in ways that we're not used to thinking about.
David Chase, We love The Sopranos so much, we just believe in you and we want you to make the next Sopranos.
Here's
$1 million an episode. But that's what Netflix did. They went to Trigger Street and said, we love you, Kevin Spacey.
What if they said,
here's $100 million, make House of Cards.
So what if somebody goes to Kevin Spacey or David Chase and says, here's the deal. Don't split your revenue with anybody. You just give me a payback at time and you sell directly to the public. You can charge them whatever you want. You sell directly to the public. There's plenty of platforms where you can do this, and I'll put up the money because I'm sure you're going to be a blockbuster.
Distribution is the issue right now, right?
That's what I'm saying. No, it's not. That's exactly what I'm saying. It's not anymore. You could put something up online. You could put a friggin' PayPal in front of it, and you can charge people to watch what you want to show them, and you could own the money completely.
But Jeff, the only place where that really happens is YouTube. I mean, you can talk about Louis C.K., you can talk about Howard Stern, you can talk about all kinds of people, Kevin Spacey, who made it with the old model and who are household names because of the old model.
Well,
they can do it in the new way, but the people didn't make it. You know, again, PewDiePie and all those guys on YouTube are a differentiator, but they're not household names at all.
Okay, but you can build up your reputation in a lot of different ways, right? YouTube mm-hmm. and such. And what you just said about YouTube, Google is the anti Apple and the anti Amazon and the anti Netflix. Google could say to any performer out there, this is why I introduced Stern's people to Google 5 years ago. Google could say to any top performer out there today, however they made it with their reputation, and fine, they may have made it in old ways because there's a transitional period. But let's say you go to David Chase and you say, Dave, babe, love you, love your stuff. Google says, you know, we have a standard cut that we'll take for distributing you or selling ads on your thing. You pick your model, don't care. And that's that.
Why hasn't that happened? Exclusivity.
Well, I don't think it's happened because you have studios and existing financing things that operate in that sort of thing. When a studio says they're going to back a film, right, they're already backing the film. They effectively are a VC, right? So what's a VC who's not used to doing investments in movies adding to that process other than unspecialized knowledge and cash, which is a disaster, right? So, you know, I think that's why it hasn't happened. I think. And I actually think you can find examples of movies where you have had these outside investors put in money just because they're told this is a good movie to back. But I think there's also a question about, are you backing a movie? Or are you backing a performer? Or are you backing an entertainment portfolio? Because to say,
yes,
we should get a VC company to back a movie is like saying, we should get a VC company to back the iPhone 6. And they're going to do great off the iPhone 6. But, you know, then you're going to have an iPhone 6S out and they don't have anything to do with it. Right, they don't want to back the product. They want to back the company that they hope will churn out lots of products.
Well, but they also want return. I'm just saying it's a different kind of fund. You could get return rather than waiting 3 to 5 to 10 years for return. You're going to make the blockbuster business of entertainment. VC is a blockbuster business with a longer turnaround. Entertainment is a blockbuster business with a short turnaround, and it's going to be all about deal flow. So the first time that somebody goes to a Howard Stern or a David Chase or a Tom Cruise and says, I'll back your thing to make this independent, screw all the middlemen. You are now big enough, the internet is possible enough to go without middlemen. And we're going to both keep more money as a result.
I don't know why that hasn't happened. You see it much more going the other way. You see people cherry picking YouTube stars, you know, Fred Figgles Bunny, whatever his name is. People right. like that annoying orange, those people get plucked from...
Because we're in a transition stage.
It's going to flip, you think?
This is why I keep... You know,
would that be a smart thing for a VC to do, to create a content VC right now?
No.
Should Kevin Rose go back to Google Ventures and say, let me...
Isn't that what something like an awesomeness is? These are companies started out. So they're... I think they're there. You're just not recognizing them because VCs are typically identified with funding tech companies.
Right. So there are people out there.
Yeah, it's all those stupid names that appear at the beginning of a movie that are made up companies for the purposes of
who
that.
Who was the guy who married Pia Zadora? He made all his money, selling hot tubs. I don't remember what it was. But and then he said, I want to be a movie producer. What was his name?
Okay, no. Google.
Meshulam Rickless. He was an Israeli billionaire, and he decided he wanted to get in the movie business. So he started producing movies. This is not an unprecedented, I guess.
No, but then he still had
a distribution issue, so he had to go to the movie companies at that point.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. For TV and movies and music, you had to have distribution companies.
In fact, this probably does happen all the time. You make the movie, then you go to Sundance.
Yep.
And you say, okay, who wants to distribute this?
Right, but that's the argument we were making. What you were asking was, where do you get the risk capital to make it in the first place?
Right. Well, there are people doing that. I'm saying that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, good subject. Love it. But there's phones to talk about. And gadgets and gizmos.
And buttons.
Buttons. More important things to talk about. Not really.
I stopped you from making your... sponsor break, didn't I?
No, I did it. I just did it so subtly. I slid it in. You didn't even notice.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. It's like medicine into a baby's mouth.
All of a sudden.
Here comes commercials. Open wide.
That's, I was, my, we had a great pediatrician. That's exactly what he would do. He was going to give the kid a shot. He'd shake him. And they'd go, what? And they go, boom. They wouldn't even know what happened. It's a little weird, but it worked.
When are you getting your
Moto?
Google Monolith?
My Google what?
Monolith.
My hub. I canceled. Yeah. This is actually a good subject. I canceled it.
Because of the Asus?
Well, because of the Ars Technica review. Ron Amadio reviewed it and said, this thing is a pig. It is not a good router. He calls it their smart home Trojan horse and a $200 leap of faith. And if you look at the benchmarks he did with a two-year-old Asus router, it was very, very slow. He also says it's very limited because the only way to configure it is with the app, and the app has very few features. It is not, in fact, I thought, oh, this, because it's from Google, this is going to be a sophisticated device. And in fact, it's not. Look at the transfer times. This is not even the latest Asus router. It's a couple-year-old Asus router. It took, for a 4-gig file over Wi-Fi, 312 seconds, 5 minutes on the Google Hub, 1 minute on the Asus.
But that Asus is the old and busted, the new hotness they announced today.
The spider router.
Yeah, exactly. It's a 2.167 gigabits per second on 2 5-gigahertz bands.
Yeah.
It's a blistering. Fastest router ever.
I actually bought yesterday. So I canceled the OnHub, and I bought the high-end Asus router of yesterday.
Yeah. Should have waited.
Should have waited. It's coming today, unfortunately. But it still will be much faster than this.
Yes.
You're getting your OnHub tomorrow?
Well, Walmart lied. They kept on saying it was to be delivered August 21st. I finally didn't update anything. It was awful. All I got from Walmart was spam.
Right.
So I canceled that. And then somebody on Twitter said, I just got it on Best Buy. Of course, you know, Pavlov's dog that I am. I immediately ordered on Best Buy.
Oh, I did too. I ordered it as fast as I could, but
it's coming tomorrow.
I'm glad mine's not coming because I cancel it. but I will be very interested in your results.
Now maybe I won't open the box. I don't know.
Yeah. The problem I have is, you know, I test a lot of stuff. Internet in the house is a mission critical thing. I screw with the internet in the house at my own peril.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something I want to benchmark.
Right.
And I don't, and this really was a pig in a poke. And after reading Ron Amadio's review, I was a little hurt because a lot of people got free on hubs because they were invited to a Google event, which we were not invited to. But now I'm glad because they got to review it and let us know not to buy it.
Were all the reviews? I thought
they were all very negative. But Ron's was, look, we know Ron. He was on the show.
We know Ron, yeah.
We trust Ron. And I tell you what, you look at these benchmarks. Now, admittedly, these are, you know, it's hard to benchmark this kind of thing. But I think what it became immediately clear is this is not a state-of-the-art router. This is really all about home automation.
Yes.
And I'm not really ready to pick a winner in home automation. We're going to see an Apple TV next week that will do this a similar thing. I've got SmartThings. I think that there's, and a new SmartThings is coming. Look at the difference in speed. This thing was about 1/5 to 1/6 the speed of a couple of year old Asus Wi-Fi router.
Yep.
That is not impressive.
I mean, they've got some intelligent switching around there's some intelligence behind it. It's just, I would like to see that applied to a really fast router.
Well, I think there's intelligence because remember, we had Matt Cutts on, and he initially said, well, it's got 13 antennas, and it will change the band every 15 minutes.
It's got 13 antennas, and my razor blade has 5 blades.
I know. Well, and then Matt kind of interestingly said, I just heard from the OnHub team, it does have 13 antennas. It does check the state of the Wi-Fi every 15 minutes, but it doesn't switch. So it's like, well, what are you doing there? What's going on there?
What is it checking for?
What's it checking for?
Yep, they're still there.
Now, I am not a privacy nut, by the way. I don't care that it's Google's hub in my house.
Oh, and I trust them to do it right.
Yeah, I don't think that's a problem.
I like my Apple time capsule or whatever I have in my AirPort.
You know, I've been having so much trouble with my AirPort Extreme, and I have the new one that I really am ready to try a different router. And Asus does make very, very, very good routers.
What's it do to you?
The one thing Asus does is the one I got, okay, it's not a spider, but it does have five antennas. It's tri-band because it's got dual 5 gigahertz plus. And 5 gigahertz has been good, has been very, very good to us. So I don't know. I'm desperate. I got the 3200. That's what I got. Yeah. There's also multiple LAN ports, blah, blah, blah. I just feel like there's more I could do. So I decided not to sacrifice myself. But good on you, Jeff, and let us know how you like it.
I don't know. Jake's, it depends on what Jake says.
Yeah, you know what? Everybody needs a Jake.
Yeah.
What do you think,
Jake? You may yell at me.
Let's have Jake give us a benchmark. You know, we should still get one and benchmark it.
I've got a Jake, too, and I don't think it is a good thing to have a Jake because you're like, okay, nerdy child of mine who I gave life to, fix all this stuff for me.
Please.
I don't have to learn how to do it.
Yeah, I do. So Motorola today at noon launched the new Moto X a day early. They tweeted it. They had a tweet that said September 3rd. I was expecting September 3rd. And then they tweeted a date yesterday. We're going to do it tomorrow. So the Moto Maker is there. Don't know much about it. The choices are three different levels of storage, 16, 32 for another $50, 64 gigs for $100 extra. Moto Maker is there with all the traditional Moto Maker choices, including different front colors, different back styles, leather, wood, and plastic, different accents, engraving, and so forth. This is the new Moto X Pure, which is a 5.7, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty big phone. Everybody's doing big phones now. They also unexpectedly announced a new Moto 360, actually several new Moto 360 watches. Android Wear really seems to be going somewhere.
By the way, why couldn't they get rid of the flat tire?
There's always a flat tire.
But they could have found a clever way to hide it.
With a big bezel around it.
Well, something.
But that's how the other guys do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know.
And the problem is that you have less screen as a result because that's not good. The site is really suffering. I think a lot of people are ordering products. I think that it's just that they decided to have a larger screen, less bezel. This is an interesting one. This is the first Android Wear watch with a built-in GPS, a runner's watch.
Yep.
That, I think, will do well.
Yep. That'll be nice.
That's not available immediately.
And this will work with Apple.
Well, that's the other story, is that they have now put out an Android Wear app on Apple for the iPhone. I haven't played with it yet. Megan Maroney, who does iOS Today with us, I just gave her my LG Urbane because that's the only one that's.
It was a ruse. Officially. She just wanted to get her hands on your watch.
So she's going to try it. Well, I don't have my iPhone anymore. I gave it to my son. It's in preparation for the new iPhone. So I can't tell you, but I can't imagine it does quite as much as. Yeah. No. The Android phone, because iPhone is so locked down.
But the fact is that people don't do much with their Apple Watches or Android Wear watches anyway.
It's
mostly notifications, which works fine, and a few other things. So I think it's actually for people who want to have an iPhone but also don't want to spend a fortune on a watch and want a good watch that costs less than an Apple Watch, it's a good option.
I think that's why this is interesting, because Apple doesn't currently do a GPS.
Nope.
If you want GPS functionality, you have to take your phone with you. This new Moto 360 Sport does have GPS.
Yeah.
There are high-end runner's watches that do this. Yep. But if you're a runner, this is really cool.
Yeah.
And then the other new 360 has a variety of looks. I'm trying to get into the site because it's been really...
I feel so lost now. I don't know which of the new Android watches are the watches that you should have.
Yeah,
I'm still stuck with.
There's some really good looking ones.
I thought it was all about the 360, but everybody talks about the Urbane or whatever.
Yeah. No, don't get the Urbane. That's now last generation. Mm-hmm. But there's other round ones that look good. It wasn't Sony's. It wasn't Samsung. They're doing Tizen.
Huawei has.
Huawei.
Huawei just came out.
I keep hearing really great things about
nice
the Huawei watch.
Nice looking Android Wear. Yeah. Round Android Wear watch with no flat tire, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
but it'll have a bigger bezel as a result.
Well.
Gold. And you can get gold with a micro neural.
See, that bezel's not. I'll take that bezel.
No, this is the Moto 360. You will take. Oh. This isn't. You want all gold?
Where's the Huawei?
You can do all gold. Should we look at Huawei? All right. H-W-U-W-E-I Android Wear Watch. Here it is. And some people have hands on already. It's up for pre-order. Pre-order has just started.
I'm sorry. I'm still stalled back at the $350 thing for something that's not being pushed by Apple, which I think the Apple Watches are already overpriced. So, but it's Apple. So when
I know. Well, Apple's done so well that, or apparently done so well that Huawei
but that's
said.
Apple.
Yeah. Yeah. So but Huawei, this is, these two are the Urbane, which I we were talking about. The middle one is the Huawei, and you see a small bezel and no flat tire. So maybe, yes, Jeff, your dreams will come true. And
I love how all the images of these don't show any of the actual smartwatch functionality.
Right. It's always a watch.
Right? Yeah. It's like, it, look, it's just a watch. Yeah.
Right. It looks more expensive.
Starts at $350. It goes all the way up to $800 if you want rose gold with gold links.
I would not invest a lot in a technology device. It's gonna get updated.
I think these watches are very strongly targeted at Chinese buyers who are looking for status symbols.
Nouveau riche.
Right. So yeah. and Huawei has a much better reputation in China than it does outside of China. So.
Sapphire glass display, which Apple couldn't.
Yep.
Actually, no, Apple has it on their higher end watches, not the Sport.
Yes, right.
The charger Chinese looks very currency. Much like the Apple charger. I think this is probably intentional, right?
With Chinese currency heading down fast, you wonder if they're going to use
maybe
that.
Maybe that's
to
not a market.
Beat on price.
Yeah. Snapdragon 400. That's what everybody's using these days. I'm not sure I'll order this. Do you want to get this one? It's your turn to buy, Jason.
Well, I should be getting a review unit from Huawei.
Nice.
They reached out to me, so I said,
like,
yes.
It.
And I said, also, anything else Huawei, just send it my way.
The Mate 4 looks very nice. Yes.
Anything else Huawei while we're talking? Yeah.
What else Huawei?
Maybe possibly, I don't know, your Nexus that's going to be announced at the end of the month?
Oh, that's another story. The rumor is September 29th at Google Nexus event, LG Nexus 5, Huawei Nexus 6.
It's phone season. It's device
crazy.
Season.
Yep. This is the Huawei you want to get, the Mate S.
Yeah. I would
very
love
pretty.
To check that out.
Yeah. And that is gold, yes, but not solid gold, just, you know,
as long as the back doesn't curve and I can put a wallet case around it, you can talk to me.
Oh, it does. It looks like an HTC One.
Then don't talk to me. I can't shove a credit card in that, Google. Thanks very much.
Yeah.
But I can in that.
Yeah, so. There you go. Now you're talking.
The other thing, Danny, you're right. The other problem I have is that whenever I'm at a restaurant eating alone, my sad life, you know, having lunch, the damn rabbit keeps on twirling around. I have to get a napkin to put the phone on.
You could
on
play spin the iPhone.
Oh, really?
Yeah, spin the phone.
But I'm serious. Like, I have not carried a wallet now for, 2 years. Like, I've managed to get by just carrying two credit cards, my driver's license, and an extra $20 bill tucked into my phone.
Yeah.
And it's been revolutionary. I mean, it's so liberating having only one thing that I'm carrying around. That, to me, is like a standard. I'm sorry. I can't buy your curved phone.
I just bought a wallet case from Dodo case from the new iPhone that has a wallet built into it.
Oh, and the flip thing on the front? I don't want that.
You don't want that either, though.
No,
you just want it on the back.
I don't have time to be trying to flip my case around.
Don't have time. Nobody got time for that. Nobody got time for that.
Don't you know, Danny is a busy guy.
I'm a busy guy. Nobody got time for flipping the.
I don't want flipping casing.
Flipping the casing.
No flipping.
No flipping.
Well, and Danny, you're always biking and kayaking and going to the beach and doing stuff like that. So it's like, you know, not having a wallet, it's like you only have one thing, and you're not going to forget your phone. So
only one thing.
And you're not going to. That's most important. You're not going to forget your phone.
Right.
This is also there's so many. This is the Zen Watch 2 from ASUS coming in October. Some of this is because of IFA. Most of it's because of the holiday shopping season just around the corner.
I feel like I would have to go make a big comparison chart for all this stuff.
So much crap.
Just to figure out what one I should actually care to look.
We said there were too many TV shows. No, that's not the problem. There's too many watches, phones, tablets. We're being buried in crap. I can't wait till I buy one thing and stick with it for more than a month.
Good luck with that.
You don't really.
No, I do, but Lisa won't let me. I actually said at the beginning of this silly season that we're just entering, I actually said, I'm not going to buy any of these new phones. And Lisa says, the hell you're not.
Yeah.
I even bought, I told you about the Robin's Egg. I did not get the new Nest thermostat. I had a Nest and I never installed it in the new house. Do you have a Nest?
No.
Do you care?
I don't.
Big screen.
I've got a boxed one sitting out there too. I haven't installed it.
I installed one just to understand how they worked, even though I never really needed it, but for like 5 days a year. Although it was pretty handy when it would actually get cold enough that we needed to turn on the heat, and I could do it from the couch. I was like,
"Yeah, that's nice."
I was like a hero. Oh, you want heat? Here we go.
Yeah, now you could, if you have an Amazon Echo, you could say, "Turn up the heat with your Echo."
Yeah,
I'm not allowed to use the Echo.
What?
My wife is tired of us all yelling at it. Because we get into these competitions. It's like, Echo, play this. Echo, volume 5. Echo, volume 10. Echo, what's this? Echo, what's that?
Oh, boy. We are setting everybody's Echo off right now.
No, he's good. No? He's saying Echo, not the other word.
You're right.
That's
okay.
The right way to do it. That's... Thank you very much, Danny.
Alexa, news update.
I actually bought a second one, Danny.
Downstairs. Alexa, volume 10.
I have his and her echoes now. That's how we solved that.
I don't have it here, but I got one of the Nest Cam to see how that worked, too. I put it in the kitchen and nobody knew.
That got me in trouble once.
We were watching him making stuff, and then I was showing my wife, we were going, are you sure you want that? And he's just like, he's at the camera, and all of a sudden you see him go,
There's a camera in here.
It was classic.
Also, today at IFA, Acer had its press conference and announced a new phone, the Predator 6. This is not a joke. 10-core smartphone. It's a deca-core MediaTek processor.
Console that also has a phone added.
Yeah, basically. 4 gigs of RAM, 6-inch display, 4 speakers, haptic feedback.
What OS is it running?
I'm sure it's Android. I mean,
so what am I playing on it that I need all that?
There's good Android games. You sound like an iPhone owner.
I know there are, but what Android game is demanding 10-core processing?
I play Jeopardy. Jeopardy's lovely game.
This is future-proofing, so you never, ever have to buy another phone again.
Fallout Shelter.
Yeah, I did that last time. That's why I'm not buying this phone.
Now, actually, Fallout Shelter, I could use a better processor, because that thing is a big.
Okay, see?
That's Apple.
The theme.
No, Fallout Shelter's on Android.
Oh, yeah, it is, isn't it? Yeah,
everything's on Android.
Yeah, it is on Android, but you can't move what you did on... Whatever device you're on, that's the device you're on for the rest of your life and follows you. I don't care because I only have like...
Don't spend any energy.
This is the theme so far at IFA. You know, we saw it in the Sony event. We see it here. These companies are coming out with these really amazing phones with amazing specs. The Sony phone has a 4K display and 23 megapixel camera, et cetera, et cetera. These companies, it's so hard to compete in this business that they're all coming out and targeting these tiny markets. How many people are going to buy a 10-core smartphone? 300 people? I mean, it's a tiny, tiny market. And Sony and Acer, they're going after these really minuscule markets because the big markets are going to be completely taken over by the Chinese companies, by Apple, Samsung,
price.
And others. Yeah.
What's boggling my mind is that the cost of the phones, I wish someone would chart it, but they seem to keep going up, right? Like, you know, an Apple phone, you're getting close to dropping $1,000 on it. The edges and everything that came out, and I was thinking... Samsung, you're trying to fight with Apple on a device that, aside from the weird edges that don't have much usefulness to them, is oftentimes still seen as not quite as good, yet you still want this premium price. And I guess maybe that's working for them, I guess. But I just look and I think, wow, now you're dropping $800 and $900. And meanwhile, you've got your PCs that have come down in price. And it's just like... When did this tiny thing turn out to be much more expensive than that giant thing?
Nothing makes sense anymore. And, you know, I think what they're doing is they're chasing margins. They're figuring, well, we're not going to go after the mass, you know, we're not going to make it up on volume. We need to find a niche that can have some margins where it can have profitability. And it's very difficult to do because, as we know, there are only two companies in the industry making profits. And so that I think that's what this rising prices phenomenon is all about, Danny. It's all about, like, well, you know, if we have a really high-end, really expensive phone. We charge $800 for it. Maybe we can make it for $750 and we'll make $50 a phone.
Or go, or the race to the bottom. You go one of two ways, right? You don't want to be in the middle. Although Moto's in the middle, that's $400, $500.
Well, that's the other thing is I look at something like the Moto X. And like somebody was asking me for like they wanted a phone, and yeah, I was like, the Moto X. I mean, it's like $400 for an unlocked, awesome phone.
It's a great deal.
It's cheaper than the Nexus 6.
Right.
Like, and in fact, the Moto X that they had really was the Nexus 6 for all purposes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was, like, cheaper than buying it from Google.
It was better than the Nexus 6, really.
Yeah, so I look at that, and I Motorola just kind of think, gosh, I hope Motorola makes it because, you know, it's nice to see phones that are being sold at sensible prices. But
Jason Howell's the host of All About Android. He's also our producer. Jason, is it just a rumor, the new Nexus phones? I mean, do we know anything about them?
We know what we think we know is that LG is going to have a sequel to the Nexus 5.
Right. The Nexus 5, 2015. They made the original Nexus 5 too, right?
Right. Probably. I mean, in my opinion, probably the best of the Nexus line.
I agree.
Devices.
Yep.
So that's something to look forward to. And then, of course, Huawei is making the sequel-ish to the Nexus 6. And I think it's going to be a 5.7-inch screen.
Yeah.
As opposed to six inch,
just a little too big.
Yeah, I think most of all. And then the Huawei device is going to be probably the higher priced device. Although probably not as extreme as the Nexus 6 was. The Nexus 5 will be a little bit, you know, probably more in that like 400-ish range, I'm guessing.
And then so CNET says it's going to be September 29th in San Francisco. If it is, by the way.
Right.
Guess who's going?
What day of the week is that? I didn't look up.
I don't know. What day of the week is that? Do you know?
Oh, I know. I can.
If only too bad there's no way to.
Echo
it's a Tuesday.
Yeah.
It's a Tuesday.
All right.
Oh, good. We can talk about it the next day, and you can talk about it that night.
Yeah. And these would be, if they come out September 29th, would that mean Marshmallow comes out September 29th, or is this an announcement for a phone that will come out in October or November or December? With Marshmallow.
The latter, I would think, right?
You never know.
Yeah, I would say the latter, but
think?
I suppose you never know.
You never know.
I think that's kind of how they've been doing it. Which, actually, now that I think about it, it is kind of strange that they're planning an event because the last couple of years they really haven't done that.
I know.
They've just gone we'll put out a press, a press release on the blog and its importance will rise to the top all on its own. And I don't know if that's the best strategy, but that's what they've been doing. So this would be a little different.
I feel sorry for Sony because I feel like the Xperia, and I know I've been guilty of this, just doesn't get the attention. The last Xperia I reviewed, the Z3, was a little disappointing. It had a lot of great specs, especially for the camera, but was not a great camera.
Yep.
And so I just didn't – I wrote off the Xperia line. The new Z5 looks interesting. They've got a premium version, which won't be available till later this year, that is a 4K smartphone. The chat room's saying something like 806 dots per inch, which is 300 more than the Note 5, which is crazy.
It's 2160 by 3840.
Wow. that's just nuts.
That's
but they say they will upscale high def content to look good on a 4K. Anything is going to look good on that screen, probably. Yeah. There's not a lot of 4K content.
For cardboard.
Yeah. Oh, so I pointed that out. For VR, it's great because you divide it in half.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be HD VR capability. But Sony does have a visor, a headset.
You not only divide it in half, but you have a lens that's focusing on something that's 2 inches from your eyeballs.
Right.
So you're really up there looking at the pixels.
Yeah, right. Certainly on the Galaxy Gear VR with an S6. I see the pixel. I see a screen door effect.
And it's waterproof, so you could have underwater VR.
Nice.
Finally.
Long last.
Oh, man. Sony is losing, according to Engadget, $1 million a day on mobile.
It's good business.
So you gotta,
good work if you can get it.
You really got to wonder. In fact, you know, they've been losing money on TV. They've been losing money on everything except their insurance business in Japan, which is apparently the only part of Sony that's doing very well. I feel for them because they know cameras. Boy, I love their cameras.
Well, here's a theory for you. What if these phones with these ridiculous specs, 4K, it has got a 23-megapixel camera, what if this is just a sales pitch for their components to sell to Apple and Samsung and other companies? Hey, look at
this
camera.
Maybe this is a reference platform.
Exactly.
Yeah. At this point, battery and camera are all I really care about.
What? Their opportunity was they should have brought back the Walkman and cassette.
Oh, they actually did.
Everybody's
selling the Walkman
They need to bring back the Sony iBo.
Not with cassette, though.
No. Yeah, but that's it. You bring it back with the cassettes. You start getting people talking about how, oh, my God, you haven't heard sound quality until you've heard it on tape.
It's the new vinyl, yeah.
You bundle in an MP3 player so it can be dual use, and it's going on with it from there. Can you imagine, like, the hipsters going, oh, yeah, that's right. I got my thing. They'd be all walking wearing them. They missed it with Guardians, and Guardians 2 is going to come out, and they're going to be cassettes going to be back, and they need to be ready for it. I'm telling you, vintage cassette is coming back, and I have got 45 of them ready to go.
It's true. Guardians of the Galaxy, it was all about the mixtapes.
People are desperate for my copies of Genesis. It's going to be going great. I'm ready for it. Bring it back.
What if you made like a digital mixtape, like it, like it looked like a cassette? I think they did make those. I think I saw one of that radio show.
You're talking about mini disc?
No, it was it looked like a cassette, but it had SSD storage inside. Well,
there's audio books that basically are like that.
Yeah, that's right. Our show today brought to you, speaking of audiobooks, by FreshBooks. Not about audiobooks. It's FreshBooks is a cloud accounting system that makes it so much easier for you to do what you have to do, which is send out invoices, and more time to do what you love to do, which is do your work, your stuff, the thing, the reason you became a freelancer. I love FreshBooks. It saved my life. It's now almost 10 years ago when I discovered FreshBooks. I was doing it by hand, as I'm sure many of you still are. Now you can use FreshBooks to design a beautiful, professional-looking invoice, send them out. The invoice itself goes in email, although that, you know, for a little extra, you can actually have them, believe it or not, print it out, lick the envelope, stamp it. Some people still demand that. At least they did 10 years ago.
Yeah.
The nice thing is the email they send out, most people prefer, and there's a pay me button on it that lets your client pay you instantly. And for that reason, FreshBooks users get paid about 5 days faster than people sending out paper invoices. It really is a great system. Should you have a slow pay, FreshBooks helps with that too. Automatic reminders. Great for expenses too. If you keep track of those, the FreshBooks app on your Android or iOS device will let you take pictures of receipts, get them right into the invoices. You can also track your time and hours if you bill that way. It couldn't be easier. And I'm telling you, if you're suffering now at the end of every month, sending out those bills, please do yourself a favor. For the next 30 days, just try FreshBooks.
I used to hate that. I used to dread billing.
Me too.
And now it's trivial. It's like, you know, a couple of minutes in and out.
You still do,
I still use it every single month.
Because you write articles.
Whatever computer world.
That's all freelance, right?
That's all freelance. And I bill with FreshBooks every single time. And it's so easy.
Yeah.
I just go in there and I've already plugged in how much I get per column, what the address is, who it goes to, all that stuff. So it already knows that stuff. I just go in there and say, well, okay, there's four of them this week. Right. Click a button, off it goes. And they love it because it's always perfectly formatted. There are no errors in it. There are no problems with it. They know what to expect. It's fantastic.
They have great support, too, from their offices in Toronto. They do currencies, all the different currencies. That was helpful for me because I was billing Canadian as well as U.S. companies. It's everything you could think of is in there. I want you to go to – and if it's not, you call them. They'll put it in there. FreshBooks.com/twig. Start your 30-day free trial today. FreshBooks.com/twig. Both Mike and I stand behind it. We've both used it. New Android tablets. Samsung's announced a pretty nice looking. Have we ordered that one for review? I can't keep up with this.
Are you talking about the S2?
Yeah.
I don't know. That's a good question.
Well, you should get one of those. Lenovo has introduced a trio of Android tablets that are at least a little different looking, although it's the Yoga Tab series. 3.38 inch. Yoga Tab 3 is 8 inches. The Yoga Tab 3 is 10 inches. The Yoga Tab 3 Pro is 10 inches. They have low-end and then somewhat higher-end Atom-based, the Pro.
And what's the right size? Like, we're about to enter into the era of giant tablets.
It's got a projector in it.
We learned on 95 Mac today that the iPad Pro, the long-threatened iPad Pro, is actually going to be announced next week, a week from today. And
is it?
It is.
Now they're saying it will.
According to Mark Gurman. Mark Gurman.
Well, Mark's right. Pachowski said it, and then everybody's saying, no, Pachowski got it wrong. It's not till October. Now Gurman says it will. Good.
Yes.
Good.
And meanwhile, you know, there's...
But
there's
does it have a Pico projector in the little... in the leg?
No. No, it does not.
What is that one going to cost?
$599.
So who's who announced them? Who announced it?
This is these are your Lenovo Yogas. The Yoga Tab 3 Pro 10-inch has four front-facing speakers, Atmos 3D surround sound processing, and a Pico projector that can project an image up to 70 inches in size with a brightness of 50 nits.
I mean, to be honest, getting it just for the Pico projector.
This could be your multimedia device.
Yeah. I have a little small one we always would like to take on trips, and by the time I get it all set up and I've got the thing hooked up in here and the input's going with there, if I have the movies already on my Android, yeah, it'd be awesome.
Wi-Fi model's only $499. It's the same price as the low-end iPad. You know what? That Pico projector has piqued my interest. Mm. That's the one thing that might...
You might be nitpicky about the brightness, though.
It is a little low.
You know, it sounds
great.
You got
to darken the room.
Yeah. And if it is bright enough, then the battery will last 10 minutes. But still, it's an interesting idea. This kind of thing has been on the fringe for a long time, and it's great to see it kind of like creeping out into something you might actually buy. But yeah, I like it.
Wow.
I like the
idea. Really think of it as a projector with a tablet attached, right? All right. That one I might get.
So have we talked about Tahoe, the Samsung tablet that's 18.4 inches coming out? That's rumored. Yeah.
So Samsung 2 is a normal size tablet.
Yeah. So Tahoe, codenamed Tahoe, it's a lollipop tablet with mid-range specs, but it's 18.4 inches across for the display. And what is the right size for a tablet that's way too big? I guess that's the wrong way to say it.
I mean, 18. That's pretty. That's like a placemat.
It's like a. If this was a laptop screen, it would be a huge laptop.
Well, it should be your dinner table.
Yes, exactly.
Why look at your phone at the dinner table?
Some people like big laptops.
The phone.
Well, that's why Apple is hoping this Pro would go, but that's only 12.9 inches. This is much larger.
That's going to be so bizarre. We're going to have a 12.9 inch tablet from Apple that I can touch, but I still can't deal with my MacBook screen that way.
Yeah.
They really ought to add touch to the MacBook. Do you think tablets are a vital, viable category, or is it? I'm starting to think it's such an intermediate that, especially now that we have big phones, that most people will either use the phone or the laptop, and the tablet where it sits in the middle is just not that useful.
See, and it's hard. Since I moved my wife to the iPhone 6 Plus, she hasn't used her tablet.
Right.
My sons haven't used their tablets, and they're on larger screen phones. I still use the tablet all the time, but
I mean, I think that tablets should be super vital and useful, but they're not because people don't change their behavior and companies aren't coming along with the program. I think one of the ideal tablets would be if the Chrome OS had a real touch user interface. So you had a totally Chromebook-like cloud-based device that was a tablet. You mount it in places, put it on the refrigerator, put it in the, you know, in certain places, and it was like a sort of a public terminal inside your house. That would be super useful. If we had a real sort of desktop-style apps that ran on touch devices with a giant screen, I'd love to be able to use an Android device as my full-time desktop computer with powerful apps and all the rest. I think we're really getting there, but again, that's not a behavior that people really want to embrace.
Here is something interesting. Microsoft, this is rumored, the Microsoft Continuum Dock. This will go, we talked about it on Windows Weekly today, this will go with the newest Windows phone, which will be, I think, called the City Talk, or City Man. There's the City Man and the Talkman. It's a 5.7-inch kind of phablety phone. It will have – this looks like a Type-C connector. I'm almost willing to bet that's a Type-C connector, which then goes into a dock, which has three USB ports, HDMI, and DisplayPort out. You connect that to a screen and a computer. Your phone is your computer.
Yeah.
Is that a crazy product? But
well, we had those phones that docked into the laptop and made your and
exactly.
The laptop.
But now put this from Microsoft. That's what's different about it, right? Yeah. All of a sudden, this is a Windows 10 product. because Windows Phone is Windows 10.
Right.
Very intriguing to me. This is a different Microsoft, I have to say. I
mean, yeah, it is.
That is a crazy product.
Yep.
Three USB ports, an HDMI display port. If you get the new high-end... Oh, you, the Quintinuum also uses Miracast, which means you don't even have to have a wired monitor. You pair a mouse and a keyboard with the thing in the dock. You won't even need the dock. You just Miracast from the phone.
Mm-hmm.
The phone is a computer. Too bad it's Windows Phone.
Yeah.
But Windows Phone is more Windows 10 now than it was before. So.
Yep. Yep.
Anyway. We live in interesting times, do we not? Many, many options out there. New apps layout for a mobile. I haven't seen this. Have you seen it, Danny?
It's not up online yet.
It's not on mine either.
For where?
For the store on mobile.
I haven't looked. I was looking at it a little bit yesterday because I don't tend to search for apps when I'm on my mobile browser. But, yeah, I'd seen that. I think it was in testing as well. Interesting.
Yeah,
I think it ties into that. I mean, well, I don't know if you want to go back to that other story about them blocking the app install ads too.
Let's talk about that. Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, yesterday Google announced that I think we've all had this happen where, you know, you do a search, you click on a link, you end up at some website. This happened to me with our local TV stations all the time. And before you get the article, you get this annoying thing that pops up saying, "Download our mobile app," right? So you're like, okay, I'll dismiss that.
I hate that so much.
Yeah. And so then, you know, and you read the article. And Google feels that you hate it so much that they've decided if somebody does that on their website and they show you a mobile install app that blocks all the content like that, then they're going to consider the site to no longer be mobile friendly. And as a result, it will no longer rank as well when people are doing mobile searches. So you're going to get penalized for doing that sort of thing.
It's a little penalty, right?
It's kind of like a small penalty. It's smaller than it sounds, I think. I mean,
but we don't actually know how big it is. It's a penalty.
Right.
We've already had all sorts of sites face penalties for not being mobile friendly,
right,
and still manage to rank well in mobile search results.
It isn't necessarily a penalty. Here's why I don't think it's that big of a penalty. First of all, lots of advertisers are going to go running and stop doing this. So for the ones who continue doing it, they're going to have a lot more eyeball than users are expected to see. Secondly, on mobile, I think I would suggest, I would suspect that a lot fewer people arrive at pages through search, right? So you get a link from Twitter or you get a, you know, through social media or whatever. And
the Google results don't matter.
The Google search results, it'll affect some number, but the payoff, there's clearly a big payoff for these kinds of ads. They take over your screen. They say, download this app.
Well, I'm even tempted to do it. You know, once we have official apps... Mm-hmm. And you go to our website on mobile, wouldn't I? I mean, it's kind of in my interest to let you know that we have a mobile app. We wouldn't do, though, a big takeover. And that's what they're deprecating, right? They don't want a big takeover.
No. As long as you want to have a little banner up at the top of the page, then I think it's okay. Yeah. And otherwise, they'll consider, you know. So it's a penalty. It doesn't mean that you're necessarily banished from showing up in mobile search results. But, it's Google wielding their power to say, we don't think this kind of behavior is good, so you shouldn't do it. Which led to my big rant yesterday where I was like, you don't really think things that are annoyingly causing people to install apps should be happening, then maybe you shouldn't do that in your own mobile search results. And because I don't know if you've noticed, but when you search on mobile in Google, you get all this stuff trying to get you to install apps now. So if you've got my article from MarketingLand, you'll see. But, you know, one example is I do this search for, say, Denali. And in the middle of the page, it's telling me, hey, download these apps. They have content related to that. And they're news apps. And the content that they have related to it, it's just web content. I don't need the apps to read that content. But Google's decided to take, you know, like 10% of their search results page and devote it to telling me to install apps that I don't necessarily need, because I could just click from my mobile web browser.
That's so annoying. Look at
mobile
that.
Web art. See? But that's an example there.
That's a takeover. That's the whole page is blocked.
Yeah. Well, in the thing above, you know, like when
that's terrible. The one above that one, Jason.
Yeah. That's the kind of thing that Google is going after, because the point is that's annoying.
Right.
Why would you want to get that when you clicked from the mobile search results
right.
to get to an article. But then if you scroll down, then see, you can do the search yourself. I search for Denali, and then Google's like saying, here's more content in apps. If I were to go download the Wikipedia app or the NBC News app, then I can read these articles, right? Except that I don't need to get those apps to read those articles. Those articles exist on the mobile web. So why are you shoving app installs at me in the mobile search results? Because it's annoying.
And that's not that's not a paid result.
It's not a paid thing, but it's annoying. And then go down one more. Or in another case where I search for, say, Best Buy, here they say, I don't have the YEP app installed, right? But here they're giving me a link in my mobile search results to the YEP app.
That's not
right.
Yeah.
But I don't have it installed. So now I'm going to have to go install it. And it's like,
I'm on a browser. Give me results I can see in the browser.
That was sort of my argument, which is you, Google, are one of the major players that's giving people so many incentives to create and have apps, some of whom don't even necessarily need to have them. So you're kind of eroding the support for the mobile web, and then you get upset that when people are on the mobile web trying to drive people to the apps, that you now decide that you should penalize them for it?
That's a different division.
It's annoying. So anyway, that was sort of my thought to Google, which was, it's you want to crack down. And the other thing, too, is why are you just going after apps? Because any takeover ad is annoying.
Good point, yeah.
So,
deprecate all of them.
Well, and I still don't have an answer from them as to why it is. Now, I could theorize that some people might find the app install ads especially annoying, right? Because it's like, well, why should I get this ad for their app to, the article's right there. But then, so what? If the publisher wants to show – so if the same publisher showed you a takeover ad for one of their events or one of their newsletters, you don't have a problem with that.
Where'd the audio go? Is that me?
No, it just muted.
No, I'm hearing you.
That was
Danny.
Me.
Oh, good.
Google
did it.
Took over. The router blocked me out. No, they didn't. But what I'm saying is, if a publisher wants to promote something else of theirs that allows them to connect with readers, like say I have a newsletter and I decide to do a takeover app saying, hey, make sure you follow our newsletter. Or say I want you to follow us on Twitter or Facebook and I do a takeover thing saying, make sure you follow us on Facebook or Twitter. They don't block that. It's only the apps that they've kind of gone after. And so we had this opinion piece from Jeremy Stoppelman from Yelp last week. He was like, hey, we think they're trying to do this stuff because it's all anti-competitive. That the more people install apps, the less likely they're to do changes. Now, he's going to have his own take on that, and you can certainly poke at it. But when you go after just app install apps on the rationale that, well, we don't like them because they're annoying to users – All the takeover apps are annoying to users.
That's the same problem, yeah.
So, yeah, the only if you're going to be cynical about it, I mean, Google makes apps, right?
Right.
I mean, any other app is theoretically a competitor for eyeballs and attention.
It's analogous to what Apple's doing in the opposite direction. Putting content blockers in Safari encourages you to use apps.
Exactly.
Where Apple sells ads.
Right, exactly.
Definitely. And Danny, on the annoyance meter, how does that rank against the idea of putting native ads in Gmail?
What?
Yeah, Google is putting native ads in Gmail. Yeah. They've been testing it for 2 years. And basically,
what are native ads?
It means that it appears in your inbox.
In my email?
Yes, it appears in your inbox as a mess. It looks kind of like an incoming.
They're going to give me spam.
Yeah, they're going to give you spam. And when you be able to forward it.
Wait, where does it appear? That's right. I thought it still appeared separately. I couldn't see an example.
It appears, as I understand it, I haven't seen it myself, but it appears as in the same space where your incoming messages are. And then you can open it, and it's an ad. And then you can save it to your inbox. You can forward it to somebody else. You can do stuff like that. But the big insult is that it comes right into your inbox.
I wish I could reverse my screen. Maybe there's a way for me to do it. Hang on here.
Do you have some in front of you?
They announced this yesterday, by the way.
Hang on here.
Although they said, according to Frederick Laudernois writing in TechCrunch, they said we've been doing this since 2013.
Well, but they've been testing it. They haven't really rolled it out.
Can you see on my screen? So these are the ads that are coming here. There's nothing you're going to see that's scary.
Oh, I've seen this. This is in the promotions folder.
But if I click on it, then I get – see how I've got a whole article that's showing up like that.
But it's a promotion.
I've seen ads in the promotions folder provided that did not come into my email. But
well, that's just because it is in promotions. It potentially, I think you could get your ads in anywhere, even if they weren't.
Oh, that's not good.
That would cause me to be screaming against Google.
Yeah,
that's the whole value of priority inbox is not to get
not to banned. See that.
Yep.
And I would argue that, watch out, in the European case, if they cut out everything else in the world as spam, but allow their stuff in as not spam because paid. Not going to look good, Google. Not going to look good at all. Because that is, in fact, you advantaging yourself with the paid. If that's what they're doing, I'm not convinced they would do that. I don't think they're that. I think somebody in that organization is going to scream evil from the mountaintops.
You're a world traveler. You all world travelers. Perhaps you have been in a city where you've heard the call to prayer.
Yes, I've been in that very city.
That's Istanbul.
Istanbul.
At night. There's the Red Mosque. Is that the Red Mosque?
I don't think so.
Can't tell. Maybe not. I think it is. Those are the towers. Because the Red Mosque has more towers than any other mosque is allowed to have, except the one in Mecca.
Yeah.
And I think there's five.
And the problem with Istanbul is that they all go off at the same time.
Yeah. Well, that's intentional.
Well, yeah, but
that's
like,
the whole point.
It's a cacophony rather than a lovely.
In Egypt, a muezzin, that's the person who sings those calls, is in trouble. Because he changed the call during the dawn prayer from praying is better than sleep to prayer is better than Facebook. And
which you think would be a fine.
And that's a dubious proposal.
I mean, that's what a cleric's supposed to do. Just
root canal is better than Facebook. Give me a break.
But he's in serious trouble.
He is. The Religious Endowments Ministry is investigating him after locals complained last week. He went on a hunger strike, and then he denied he said it. I don't know what Facebook is, and I don't know how it's spelled, he says. Of course, everybody heard him say it, so this kind of this denial is not really effective. They're trying to remove him from the mosque.
My wife is chatting me and saying it was the Blue Mosque, not the Red Mosque.
Blue Mosque. I'm sorry. Yeah. Thank you. You're right. Of course, Amira, that's the Blue Mosque. That's what I meant. I don't know where the Red Mosque is. Is there a Red Mosque?
They should do the towers in different colors like Google.
Yeah. It's beautiful, actually. It's the most beautiful mosque. Yes, of course, the Blue Mosque. If you could see the roof, you would say, oh, yeah, the Blue Mosque.
The Red Mosque is in former
Soviet
Red
Square.
Union.
Right? all right. Well, that's just, you know, that's, let's see, what else? Speaking of Facebook, we didn't mention this because it happened after the show last week. Mark Zuckerberg announced that 1 billion people used Facebook on August 24th. Was that after our show? Maybe not. Did we talk about it?
I don't think that we talked about it.
I don't think we talked about it.
That would have been an easy number for me.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And you would have stolen it from me. Then I would have complained. I would have remembered all that.
I like the Wired take on it. Only 85.7% of the earth did not use Facebook on Monday. Still a billion mobile users, daily mobile users is pretty amazing.
What's the number when it prompts the necessity for the U.S. government to go in like Venezuela and with machine guns and take over the place and make it a public utility?
Yeah.
At what is it, 2 billion? 3, 4 billion?
No, because we do not live in a socialist nation, my friend.
The People's Republic of Facebook, apparently.
I don't know what to say about that number. We trust Facebook's numbers, right? I mean, there's no way to really verify it.
It's probably,
To me, I always think of the engineering miracle that is.
Yeah.
That you could have a system of servers all containing the same content that a billion people could see on any given day is a mind-boggling.
And you know, I don't hear this a lot, but I've experienced it myself. Facebook is very fast as a website.
It's snappy.
Much more so than any other social network.
It's even faster now that I use that thing, the flat Facebook you recommended.
Yeah, Facebook flat.
I love that.
Was
that yours?
It was mine.
Yeah.
It's a Chrome plugin that gives Facebook a updated design.
It's flat.
Yep.
It's pretty. It's fast. Combine that with uBlock Origin, you don't see any ads. Life is good in Facebook land.
Yep.
And I feel bad because I know that Mark needs my money, but... Isn't that pretty? That's a Facebook flat Chrome plugin. That was Mike's pick a couple of weeks ago.
But I often load like all the social networks at once. I go in there and I go Google Plus, Twitter, Facebook.
Loaded.
And Facebook is always first to load.
And it's in PHP.
Yeah.
How's that possible?
I don't know.
Everybody hates you when you use your phone at dinner. Really, Fortune, you needed to write an article on this. It's in-depth research.
Yes. They got to expense a restaurant meal in order to research it.
Pew Research Center found that 88% of respondents believe it's generally not okay to use a cell phone during dinner. 94% say cell phone use is inappropriate during meetings. 95% say they shouldn't be used at theaters. 96% say they shouldn't be used during religious services. 100% say you should never mention Facebook in the call to prayer.
But there, there are different numbers for what other people should do versus
what I should do.
That was a lot of. What are you doing? Stop it! Pay attention. We're trying to do this. 77% said it's okay to use a cell phone when walking down the street or on public transit.
No, it's not in New York where people just
they walk into you.
Slowly.
Can I just say again, and to any company, tech company, whatever that wants to do it, I have your solution. All you need is a forward-facing camera right here. Okay? If you could just get us a forward view when we use our phones, then we can have a little window down at the bottom, and we can see what's coming at us. How hard is it? Can you imagine people would buy that?
There used to be an app that did that, so something like that. It was an email or texting app, and it showed you behind the stuff that you were typing through the camera, so you could see the pole that you were about to walk into as you're walking down the street.
Among adults,
the problem is they constantly it's the chewing gum and texting at the same time.
Yeah,
it's the speed slowdown.
Yeah.
Oh God, I hate that.
If it hits them, and they'll just stop in the middle of nowhere.
There was somebody driving. There was somebody at the gas station. And she had, and I was waiting behind her to use the pump, and she was pumping the gas. She was on the phone, finished pumping, and I just watched her like molasses slowly get into her car. Waited like 2 minutes while she slowly buckled her seat because she's not there.
Yeah.
She's somewhere else.
She's
and
on
not
Facebook.
Aware of what's going on in the world. And she was talking. Among adults aged 18 to 29, only 16% say it is okay to use your phone at family dinner.
I believe the children are our future.
My son used to do this. He'd put the phone in his lap, and he'd be at dinner like this. And I'd say, Henry, put the phone away. He said, I'm not doing anything. Henry, you're looking at your lap. Unless you've got something else going on, I'm pretty sure you got a phone down there.
I'm just gazing at my navel, Dad.
Can I also get gross here? I mean, I don't want to get too gross, but if you're standing at a urinal, you give your full attention to your phone to other things? I don't get this. And then the worst thing is you're done and you just walk out of the restroom. It's like at least go to the sink. Oh,
at least zip up. No,
I need Google Glass.
Pay attention to one stream at a time.
One stream at a time. I remember vividly, I've told this story before, so I apologize if you've heard it, but I'm in the men's room, a guy loudly, of course, that's the other problem is you're always loud.
Right.
They're loudly talking on the phone at the urinal, drops it into the urinal.
Yes.
And watching the other people in the men's room cover their, I think it was at a Google I.O., covering their mouth, laughing.
And all wishing they had their phones out so they could have taken a picture.
They all thought it was great. Like, yeah.
Did he retrieve it?
Yeah.
Was it disgusting? Was it waterproof?
Yeesh.
Okay.
That's gross.
If he had one of the new Sony phones, it probably would have been okay.
That's right.
That's why all my phones are gold from now on. I don't... Let's take a break and then...
segue.
It's your fault, Danny. You did this, Danny.
You brought us here.
I'm sorry.
It's usually my role, Danny. You did it.
You brought us here. They have oleophobic... coatings. They need ureaphobic coatings.
Yeah, I need that.
Be set.
Yeah.
Our show today brought to you by, and they're sure happy to be here, BraintreePayments.com. I actually think Braintree is so cool. If you, if you've ever used Uber or Lyft or Airbnb or GitHub or StubHub, you have used Braintree Payments. Braintree enables mobile app developers and website developers to add payment solutions that your customers will adore and you will like. I use StubHub all the time, and the ability to just very easily pay, and with every kind of payment, is what makes it great. You don't want to design your own shopping cart. That's going to let you in for trouble. In fact, mobile cart abandonment is like the number one problem with e-commerce on mobile, is people just go, I don't know what's going on, or I can't trust it, or it's slow, or it's not safe, or I don't feel right. With Braintree, you never have that problem. That's why Uber uses it. Uber's secret sauce is how easy it is to pay. And in fact, it's not just Uber, it's Lyft. It's Airbnb and hotels tonight. It's GitHub. It's StubHub. It's so many companies. You've been using Braintree all this time, you didn't even know it. Braintree accepts payments from PayPal, of course, Apple Pay, of course, Bitcoin, yeah, via Coinbase. Venmo works with Braintree. Of course, credit cards work with Braintree. That A Word will be working with Braintree, the A Word Pay. For some reason, even though it says on the site Android Pay, we accept that. They don't want me to say the Android Pay word. But they've got a little robot right there on the site.
I got to get my wife to bake me an A Word pie. Does that sound good?
Maybe that's because it's not quite there.
Because Android Pay isn't there yet.
As soon as Android Pay is out, though. And this is what's great about not writing it yourself. You've got really good people at Braintree doing the coding. 10 lines of code. It works with every mobile platform, JavaScript, PHP, Python, Ruby, and on and on and on. You could try it yourself in the sandbox at braintreepayments.com/twig. And by the way, they scale beautifully. Fast payouts, superior fraud protection, great customer service. Your customers will never be waiting. It's fast. That's what everybody wants, isn't it? And if you need a little more incentive, your first $50,000 in transactions will be fee-free when you go to braintreepayments.com/twig. We really love Braintree Payments. I just think they're just so cool. It works so well, and I want you to try it. braintreepayments.com/twig. And they're really great guys, and they're fans, and they really wanted to support the show, and I'm grateful to them. Thank you. Braintree Payments. I asked the CTO, is it Braintree, Mass? He said, no. The founders just love the word Braintree. Oh, okay. They're in Chicago and San Francisco. BraintreePayments.com/twig. All right, who wants to start? Normally, I'll tell you what.
Can I mention one other story?
Yes.
You did it in Windows. We didn't do it on this one, but I tried it. Going back to those, trying to get you to download apps. Amazon on the meta level, of course, wants you to download their app platform. And I always refuse, and I always get tricked. But I found the reason today to do it, which is on the rundown, which is that I can now download Amazon Prime stuff onto my tablet in addition to Google Play. So it's great. It's some stuff I already pay for, and it's there. And I download like crazy because I'm on planes and in trains and in tunnels. And it works.
That's a good point, because you are always in underground. Or in the air.
One or the other. I'm never at sea level.
So you need the Amazon video app. It has to be on Fire tablet, Fire phone, Amazon.
No, it doesn't.
I'm going on.
Oh, I see.
iTunes and Android. You have to be a Prime member. And by the way, it doesn't sit on your phone forever. I think you have 30 days. There you go. You can watch them, any of the Prime movies, thousands of eligible movies, including Transparent. So there you go. Wherever you go, download from iPhone and iPad to Fire tablet and Android. Yeah, that is a nice thing.
Yeah.
Jeff, do you want to give us a number?
Eeny, meeny, miny, moe. I'll pick this one. Publishers will soon be able to tell when you're bored and thus give you the appropriate kind of content. Research from it can tell from my behavior as, I'm doing this.
Oh, you
I'm
have a short that. Attention span.
I'm pointless. And so when am I most likely to read stuff, which basically is how BuzzFeed will take over the world. So add boredom detection to the list of strategies publishers will use. Apps that are most strongly correlated with being bored were Instagram, email, settings, the built-in browser, and apps in the other category. Apps that correlated most strongly with not being bored were communication apps, though email is one of them, I would think. Facebook, oddly, that's kind of when I am bored is when I'm doing Facebook. SMS and Google Chrome. When you're Chrome, I guess you're purposeful.
Hmm, that's weird. And how do they know what you're using?
It was a study where they, Telefonica and research in Spain did this.
Oh, but so somebody who's on my phone can't tell what I'm doing.
No, they looked at correlation.
Yeah.
To boredom. Male, get this, surprise this. Male participants tended to be more bored than females. And boredom was higher for the participants in their 20s and 40s and lower in their 30s. So there's a bell curve of boredom.
I'm not bored because I have my smartphone and I can always be doing other things. So I feel like that's, they're going to give me short stories. Is that why, how they're going to do that? Shorter stories?
They'll give you things to amuse you.
More
they'll
cat you, pictures?
That's when you get cats. Yeah, that's exactly when you get cats. I'm bored. Oh, fine. Give me a cat. Give me, you know, make me chortle.
Is it that you're only supposed to post cat pictures on Caturday?
I don't know.
If you're going to have a day, you should only be allowed to post cat pictures on that
Every day,
day
is yeah. Caturday.
I know. I know. Do you have anything you want to tell us about, Danny? A pick, a tip?
Or... I do.
Yes.
I do. Hey, fun fact. If you search for fun fact on Google, you get fun facts.
Oh. That's a fun fact.
So it's cool.
You just search for fun.
Fun fact.
Facts.
Huh.
Or fun facts.
Singular.
Either way.
What is the most common element on Earth? Oxygen.
Why is the leek the national symbol of Wales?
Oh. Oh, well.
I should know that. Oh, I have a leek hat.
I shouldn't.
It has to do with Shakespeare, not, right? Really, have a leak. Saint, I got a leak.
Saint.
Why does
Saint Swithin's Day
advise the Britons to, on the eve of battle with Saxons to wear leek caps so as to easily distinguish themselves friend from foe?
It was a uniform.
What, the leek?
The leek. The leek.
I just know that they
give
use
me my leek hat.
You know, this is the kind of thing they should be giving us when they detect that we're bored. These fun facts.
Fun facts.
You know, they're little snippets. They're interesting. Much better than
if I refresh, do I get a new fun fact?
Yes,
which animals cannot walk backwards? Yes, emus and kangaroos cannot walk backwards. Everybody else can walk backwards.
That's really sad.
That's from the Naked Scientist.
What do they get stuck in front of a wall? What are they like?
They're stuck.
That's it. That's it for the rest of their lives.
Why are objects in the mirror closer?
Because it's convex.
Right. Okay. That's exactly right.
Back to your other one. Which is the only bird that can fly backwards and forwards?
Oh, you got that? They must know you were bored.
It is the ruby-throated hummingbird.
It can or cannot fly backwards?
Can.
Why is Leo wearing a leek?
Oh, my God.
You thought I was joking.
I didn't have that.
This is so that during the battle, I know that I am friend.
Why do you have a leek hat?
And who found it? Give a bonus to whoever found that.
Some Welshman brought it to me.
Notice.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, wait a minute. Photo op.
We could have a whole salad. Do they have different...
What do Canadians call Canadian bacon in Canada?
What do... Back bacon.
They call it back bacon.
Back
that's right.
bacon.
Who said we don't have leeks on this show?
Who is, who is the oldest man on Earth? Guinness Book of World Records says the oldest person living, Misao Okawa, 115-year-old Japanese woman. The oldest verified age ever, 122 years and 164 days. Jean-Claude Calment of France, who died in 1997. The problem is, that's the problem with being the oldest person.
That's right. This could change any second. So here's a really interesting one. How fast does a crack in glass travel?
Speed of sound.
3,000 miles an hour.
Wow. A little less than the speed of
sound. Why do they call it a white elephant?
Why?
Because it's a burdensome gift. Supposedly, after the King of Siam gave rare albino elephants to courtiers who had displeased him that they might be ruined by the animal's upkeep costs.
Well, there you go.
What do you call a group of unicorns?
Oh, that's a good one. I know that one.
Silicon Valley startups.
Yeah. Not always. A blessing.
A blessing of unicorns. And in that note, I give you all my blessing. Wait a minute. We haven't asked Mike Elgin. What he wants to share with us today.
I got a great one. A couple of tools. If you could assist me and go to Google Docs, docs.google.com.
Yes.
And Google today rolled out some really great features for Google Docs, including the voice transcription. So they're calling it voice typing. So what you'll see, and also templates. So they have all kinds of like a resume
template. So should I create a new doc here?
Create a new doc. You see the templates on the top.
Oh, an annual budget, monthly budget, calendar. Look at all of these.
Yeah, lots of templates. Nice. This is a very common sense thing that they probably could have and should have.
Yeah, I mean, Microsoft Office has done this for years.
But the voice typing feature works really great, and it supports 40 languages or something like that.
Can I do it in a spreadsheet, or do I need
think so. Either way, you know, I think it works.
I've gotten sheets somehow. Let's go back to Docs.
Okay. Now go into Tools.
Doc. Okay. Tools. Okay.
Yeah. And choose voice typing.
Voice typing. Look at that.
It's a really cool interface, too. So if you click on the black microphone, it'll turn colored into a colored microphone. And now everything we say will be, after you approve the microphone, now everything we say will be typed out. And it works really well. You can do things like, next paragraph, and it should go to the next paragraph, or it will type, it should go to the next paragraph, exclamation point.
Actually, it's not my mic, it's here. It's
oh, yeah, of course. My wife is here, but she just left. Anyway.
Okay. I wonder if you could use this to transcribe a tape. Just play the tape.
It's pretty good, isn't it?
Work, yeah.
In fact, why can't I just put in an audio file into Google Docs?
Yeah.
Yep.
Have it transcribe this. Google, you have that one for free.
Yeah. There's a free one.
New paragraph.
New paragraph. I think it's stuck.
It was working flawlessly.
Oh, there you got it.
It's
got
saving it now. Okay, it had to save. Now it's going to continue on.
Alexa.
Okay. You can say period and new line.
Ooh, new line.
Got it, new line. See, new paragraph goes to a new paragraph.
Mike, is there any way to like move back?
A new line goes to a new line.
I think there is. Let me see.
New line.
There's a short list of things that you can do for navigation and for putting punctuation and things like that. I'm not sure if that's on there, but it's a nice feature. It's built in. If we're already using Docs, I love voice transcription. Although I can never force myself to get in the habit of using it. And then, of course, we already mentioned the templates. And within the Android version of Docs now, you can do research from directly in the Docs. So it'll go find third-party content based on your searches. So but again, that's Android only. So check that out on the Docs app in Android.
I want to thank Tommy Hermanson, who has been listening to the show and created a new logo for us based on the new Google logo. And note, Comic San apparently is involved. thank you, Tommy. I like it. I like the bolts. We can, because as you can see, our old logo still has serifs.
Yes.
It takes us a little longer than Google to redesign our logos.
Yes.
Yes. We do this weekend. By the way, let me thank everybody. Thank you, Mike Elgin, for being here. You're going to have a busy week because Microsoft just announced that they're going to stream their IFA news conference 7 a.m. Friday. You don't mind getting up early.
No, I don't mind. What the heck?
Lots of IFA coverage going on. Actually, Tommy is from Berlin, and he says when you go to IFA, go to the Augusteiner Brauhaus and the Ampakos Beer Garden.
I love those things.
That's the best reason to go to
trade shows in Germany.
The beer and the brats.
Yeah.
You're going to IFA, did I just hear?
No one's going to IFA. Tommy's there.
He's going to drink giant glasses of beer so we don't have
just to. Just for us.
Yeah.
What else? Thank you very much. Good to have you.
Thank you.
Make sure everybody tunes in Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 1700 UTC for
the world's TNT. Greatest tech news show.
The world's
ever.
Greatest tech news show. Tech news today.
Exactly.
Jeff Jarvis is at the City University of New York, where he is a professor of journalism, a blogger at BuzzMachine.com, the author of many books, including What Would Google Do?, Public Parts, Gutenberg the Geek, and his latest.
And Geeksbury Gifts out as an Audible book. If you go to Audible, you can buy it. You can hear these dulcet tones as if you haven't heard enough of them already.
And his next book, What Did Google Do?
What the hell did Alphabet do? Thank you, Jeff.
WTFG.
It's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for being here. And, of course, the great Danny Sullivan from Search Engine Land. We love having Danny on the show. He's been a Google watcher since before the beginning. Did you get the little Brio train with the Google letters?
No, I'm very jealous about that. Yeah. I don't have that. I have a wide assortment of various things.
I know you do. Course,
but not the Brio train, so I haven't seen that.
Pretty sweet.
Very cool.
I wonder where it is. Is it in the basement? Maybe, Burke, have you seen little wooden train tracks with little Google train cars on them downstairs? I think I lost them. That's shocking.
It would sell well on eBay.
Well, you could make a new one because they just buy G-O-O-G-L-N-E. It's not, it's just like,
they should do an Alphabet one.
It wasn't anything special. That's the irony of this.
They just went shopping. They didn't have it.
They just went shopping. They didn't have anything. So here, this is for you. We do This Week in Google every Wednesday, 1 p.m. Pacific, maybe 1:30, depends on how busy we are in the morning with Windows Weekly. I will, that by the way is 4:30 in the afternoon, East Coast time, 20:30 UTC. Will I be here next week? No. You're going to do the show, right?
You'll be in New York City.
I'm going to fill in for me? Jason's going to do the show.
Is going to do the show. I'm going to do the Apple show because we're reversing the day. So next week it's going to be. Is that right, Jason? Tuesday?
Yeah, that's the next Wednesday.
Next Wednesday is the Apple event.
Followed by
MacBreak Weekly.
Which you'll
be doing. This weekend.
Cool. Gotcha.
And Jason, I'm going to be in Vienna. So I was going to tell you to book two people because I don't know and I'll have my Chromebook and God knows.
We'll see what happens.
So maybe, Jeff.
I wish I were the meetup.
Okay. Gina is on next week.
Oh.
Sweet.
Well, everybody will be very happy about that. We don't really need you.
Yeah. You don't need anybody else.
That's all we need.
I'll find one more person just to make it comfy.
Thanks, everybody, for being here. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google.